Blog Talk Radio.
I thank it for me.
Yes, I am.
Ring bang 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 bang
bang bang
bang bang bang. Revolution, dang 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 dang.
Check it.
Some corporate people down from mountain, them a make big speech, but poor people the food not reach. I'm enough to wonder how them really sleep. Them living in the pool while the poor are feeling the heat. Red country, why it's red country, why. The ghetto part of town, you ain't nothing but a victim. We're just trapped in a political system. There ain't no one to say let alone. If you hit the big man a gunshot, them broke your bone with stone. Boy, so a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution coming in a Babylon, yeah. A revolution. Government, what is your aim? Where is the plan? Where is the future for the younger generation? If there's no light at the end of the tunnel, well, young your son, I go red like hell. For man, the peas are cooked, but the rice can't well. For no more big speech, time to come action. Crime and the violence rampant in our nation. People say it's because of separation. There's got to be a revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution, wriggling in a Babylon land, yeah. A revolution, yeah. Guns, knives and cutlass revolution. Dang da da dang, dang da da dang. All you false leaders, I brand you as traitors. Nothing but poor mongers, idol worshippers. Them a sorcerers. Yo, you better come down off of your pumps and cry. Stop taking poor people for a joyride. Cause all you teach is to divide and rule, and I use the people then with your political tools. Just fool. Sure. Cause a revolution, yeah. The poor going to steal the revolution. Ring dang da da ding, dang da da ding. A revolution, yeah. What a hot a revolution. Ding da dang da dang da da dang. Whoa, whoa. No matter how them a come out and a skin off them teeth. Yet the poor man the food not reach. Tell them all to practice what they preach. Cause I don't want to see them all a praising speech. Whoa, cause a revolution, yeah. I'm on site a revolution. Ring down da da ding, da da ding. A revolution.
Me. Had no money spot, and if they did, then they ass went insane when all Atlanta. I'm from the ghetto, so I'm used to that. Look on your motherfucking map and find Texas and see where Houston at. It's on the borderline of hard times. And it's seldom that you hear niggas praying and giving God time. That's why I ask Lamar to pray for me. Because I know that even I got to die, and he got a day for me. And every morning I wake up, I'm kinda glad to be alive. Cause thousands of my homeboys died, and very few died of old age. In most cases, the incident covered up the whole page. From Amsterdam to Amarillo, it ain't no secret. The world is a ghetto.
In Africa, but did nobody care? They just called up the goddamn grave digger and said, come get these motherfucking niggas. Just like they do in the Fifth Ward, in the South Park, in the Bronx, in the Watts. You know they got crooked cops working for the system, making poor motherfuckers out of victims. Cause don't nobody give a fuck about the poor. It's double jeopardy if you're black or Latino. They got their motherfucking drugs in the slums, got us killing one another over crumbs. Think I'm lying? Well, motherfucker, I got proof. Name a section in your city where minorities group. And I'ma show you prostitutes, dope, and hard times. And a murder rate that never declines. And little babies sitting on the porch smelling smelly. Crying cause they ain't got food in their bellies. They call my neighborhood a jungle. And me an animal, like they do the people of Rwanda. Fools fleeing their countries to come here black. But see the same bullshit and head right back. They find out what niggas already know.
What's up, out of town? Southern nigga down. I wish you would bring your motherfucking ass around here with that hip shit from your block. You fuck around and get your comb to your mama in a pine box. Cause we don't play that shit in Fifth Ward. We got killers and hustlers and players too, so nigga disregard what you're seeing on them Western movies. Cause yo, I ain't never rode a horse before. Hope, think we slow, smash the gas. And watch how fast I put these hands on your bitch ass. Try to load them dice, you'll meet the grave digger. Cause game recognized, game shiesty ass nigga. See how that scene food die for less than a goddamn cigarette butt for fucking with my set. So get that frown off your face, buster. Cause your ghetto ain't no harder than mine, motherfucker.
Welcome to the Chef Rob Show. Just waiting for my guest to call in. He hasn't called in yet. I'm going to give him a little bit more time. See people here that called in. So I'm going to give my guest just a little bit more time. Okay. Watching the clock. See how much damn time I need to give him. But I wanted to talk about, I want everybody's input. Call in. Number is 626-226-1479. Talk about sexual abuse during the slave trades. You know, it's something that people don't really harp on, talk about. Can overlook that. See a lot of stuff that's happening today that's directly related to that too. People's behavior. It's a little bit sad. It's disturbing. So while that brother's waiting to call in, I was trying to find something I just put in here. Bear with me. Something I just put in and it didn't even show up. Wow. So listen to some more of this little piece, this polynomic stuff, before I go ahead and start opening the lines up.
all over America, all over America, on Friday evening. Go to any big city, and you'll see blacks lined up to get into Chinatown to go to China, eat some Chinese food. Have you ever seen Chinese lined up trying to get into a black town? Somebody is not playing with a full deck. You're not playing the game to win. You're just playing. And you got to stop spending your money. So then I see, I go to various cities, and blacks got the nasty habit, when company comes, putting them in their car on a Sunday and taking them out to the white community and say, let me go out and show you some nice white homes. Y'all know what I'm talking about. Let's go out to look at the white malls. And then they come back home and say, how in the world can white folk afford all those fine homes and big houses? It's easy. It's your money. You see what I'm saying? And y'all think I'm teasing. See, they're living off of two incomes. They live off 100% of their income and 95% of yours. And you're trying to live off of 2%. It is humanly impossible for a race of people to live off of 2% of their income. And in America, you equate human worth based on what you own. And if black folk don't own 2%, that's why white racists say, black folk ain't worth 2 cents. Because we don't own anything, and human worth is equated in this country based on what you own and control. And we violate all the premises of economics. We have yet to learn how to practice group economics. And the last thing about integration is that integration got a quota system, and you need to know this. It's got a quota system. You hear white somebody against quotas, they're wrong. It got a quota system. Anytime you get more than 5 to 8% of blacks involved in anything, whites are going to put up chains. They're going to stop you. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks move into their community, they're going to put their house up for sale. If more than 5% of blacks, 8% of blacks go into their schools, they're going to pull their kids out of school. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their businesses, they're going to move the business out of town, cross town, out of the country. If more than 5 to 8% of blacks come into their association, they'll resign. They got a quota system. And people say, well, blacks are against affirmative action. No, they're not against affirmative action. They're against affirmative action for you. You see, they're against a set-aside. Racism is nothing but preferential treatment for whites. They say they're against preferential treatment. You hear them say they're against set-asides. Jim Crow is nothing but a 100-year set-aside program for whites. So they set aside the best restaurants, the best food, the best schools for whites. They say they're against quotas. You got a quota system, I told you, in the immigration laws. Today, you still are a planned minority. You can't win. So now let me get to some solutions for you very quickly. I have a few more minutes I got left. What we're going to do across this country now is going to call Powernomics. That's a new book coming out called Powernomics, Unleashing Black American Potential. It's a follow-up to the book Black Labor, White Wealth. It'll show you in very specific terms what you got to do to be competitive. The things you got to focus on is in broad categories with specific principles. The first is a community. You cannot do anything unless you have a community. Your community is your social cohesiveness. The only power, the potential that black people have in America is your social, racial cohesiveness. If you don't have that, you have no power. Forget about everything else. That's a fact of life. You got to have a community because the community will give you your businesses. It'll give you your sales opportunities and your markets. Now, how do you develop communities? First thing you must do is stay out of all cross-purpose issues. Cross-purpose means horizontal issues. Don't get involved in any horizontal issues. Let me explain it to you. I see the puzzlements in your eyes. First, racism is vertical. Remember this. Racism is straight up and down. Racism means I don't care whether you are the lowest income black or the highest, the best educated or the least educated. It doesn't make any difference. You're all in the same tube. Okay? That's what Malcolm X was asking. What is a black man with a PhD? Remember that saying? He answered, well, he's still a Negro. Okay? It means it doesn't make any difference. You're all in together. That's straight up and down. Horizontal issues are any issue that pertains to everybody. Stay out of it. You're the weakest and poorest, most vulnerable people. Don't get involved in it. Because the only people that can benefit are those people who are directly behind where the horizontal crosses the vertical. Okay? The only people who benefit are where those two points cross. That's too small. You don't have that kind of energy and resources to waste. Now, what's a horizontal issue? Sexism is a horizontal issue. If you get into these various religious issues, that's a horizontal issue. Poverty is a horizontal issue. I keep telling some of my civil rights leaders, stay away from poverty. You cannot eradicate poverty. Poverty is a fix. It's a given. You're always going to have poor people. And people say, well, you're going to have poor Greeks, poor Indians, poor Lithuanians, poor Hungarians. Quit trying to eradicate poverty and try to get as many black folk as you out and leave poverty alone. But they try to eradicate something that can't be eradicated. Culturalism. That's a horizontal issue. That pertains to everybody. Let me give you about sexism, for instance. I tell black women who always want to get into sex issues, they think that somehow that the issue is sex rather than racism. See, my great-grandmother was not enslaved because she's a woman. She was enslaved because she was black. Okay? And if you're going to get into sexism, I want black women to understand this. To keep your priorities in order. If I say abracadabra right now and sexism disappeared, you still can't go into places because you're black. And to keep it in order, remember what your mother felt. The minute she knew she was pregnant, she knew at that moment she was going to have what? A black child long before she knew the sex. So you keep your priorities straight and say, since my color came before my sex, I'm going to keep it in that order. You always say black first. So stay out of those cross prepositions. I'll explain all the next time I come back out here on a Powernomics workshop or something. But that's very important. I can show you all the problems you got with that. And see, but once you stay out of those horizontal issues, like I tell some of my Muslim friends, I said, don't be worried about pushing Islamic faith. Push your skin color first and stay aligned with your people. And I tell them, the people in the Baptist church, quit worrying about about being a Baptist and worry about being black. And again, I have to give credit to your minister. It seems like he's one of the few in the country who understands that. That you put who you are and as a people before you start talking about what denomination you belong to. And especially since most of the denominations on the earth all work together to enslave black folk. All of them pimp and hustle black folk. The Catholics, the Protestants, the Baptists, the Jews, and everybody else got black folk. But what we're going to do then is start, once we get past building these communities, then we're going to start getting into what we call practicing, building alternative economics.
Okay, greetings. Yeah, I wanted to play that real quick. Thought that was interesting and pertinent. Something we should always listen to. Hey, brother, your line is open, Kometu.
Hotel, Chef Rob, how you doing tonight?
I'm all right, how you doing?
All right, that was an excellent clip.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. I kept sitting there chopping them up, man. I was like, wow, this is... Keep playing it. I got a bunch of others I want to throw in, but that one's the plan. For me, it is.
And he covers the Christian sensibility, as I often put it, and letting people know that you are who you are first, not your denomination. That's something that you was trained in, and he was very clear that every denomination enslaved you.
Right, right, and involved in sexual abuses also.
That's absolutely true.
You know what? Since that brother in here, you can go ahead and open it up. Chime in on that talk while I wait for him to get it. What do you know about it?
About?
Sexual abuses. So it's sort of like toying with our kids and women and men just for deviant sexual pleasures.
I got it. The sexual abuse comes from, I think, the self-hatred and the trauma-based programming. Because we have that Christian sensibility, because we have that religious sensibility, we are walking contradictions and with balls of confusion, because the theology itself is confusing and contradictory. And so we justify our behavior by saying, Jesus wept, or I did confession, or God will forgive me, only God can judge me now. All that kind of mentality creates and sets up in our heart.
Wait, hold on. That one there just destroys me, man. You know, God will forgive me. You know, a murderer, God will forgive me. This guy who stuck his thing up in a 2-month-old, God will forgive me. You know, that shit's crazy to me, man.
Yeah, it's like kissing your food up to God after you dropped it on the floor where Mexicans spit all the time.
Right, so you know that thing about going ahead and abusing the babies, man. That one there, I can't really get down with that too much, man. I think that brother chimed in. Brother Rick, is that you?
Yeah, hey, how you doing, Chef? sorry about the tardiness, man, but just getting in.
Oh, that's cool, man. As long as you're here, you're here. You made it. Did you hear anything that was going on there?
I just heard something about kissing something up to God, and that's supposed to make it okay.
Yeah, that was that's.
Hey, brother.
Hey, brother, how you doing?
Go ahead,
I'm
brother.
60 years old, and I remember as a kid, that was a norm, you know, with kids. You know, we just knew spiritually something was going to happen for it to take the germs from it. It was that we were just pulling and didn't feel like losing that piece of candy, you know, so kids said that. You know, they was kissing up to God, and I'm keeping this candy, you know. But I kind of caught the gist of the conversation too, though.
I want to let him finish so you catch up, you know. And also, you know, you picking that candy up off the ground, kissing up to God, you got to worry about chewing on them damn rocks. So, Brother Kometu, go ahead and finish.
I was just saying that the Christian sensibility that we have and the religious sensibility sets us up for contradiction in our behavior and confusion in our understanding. And like we were saying earlier just a moment ago, the kissing up to God or God, only God can judge me now, or we tend to justify the negative behaviors as if they came from nowhere, and we chalk it off as our personal choices for things, when anybody with common sense knows that people without knowledge have no choices, that your choices are specifically based on what you understand. And so because black folks have tended to become lazy and hide under religion, we don't want to learn shit, and so we justify all of our messed up behavior based on some theological bullshit. We're people of sound bites nowadays. We don't really have a lot of depth in what we say and do and think. And so with that kind of sensibility, then you're going to have abuse of particularly infants and children, women, and young boys, the whole nine, because we have no a moral code of ethics of our own. Our code of ethics are based on the Catholic Church, the Baptist Church, the Protestant Church, and all the other confusing slave masters who've taught us their own values. And then we try to pimp those values off as though they're our own, and we made those choices ourselves. Total ignorance.
Makes a lot of sense, brother. Makes a lot of sense. I concur. I really concur. I need to say this, Chef, before I really open my mouth and say anything. The old cliche that it is better to be startled up as a fool than to open your mouth and remove all doubt doesn't work here with me. I open my mouth and say what's in my heart and what I feel is factual. Like I said, being 60 years old doesn't, you know, give me, you know, status. But the bottom line is I just want to say to everyone what I'm about to say is I do not apologize for it, because I would never apologize for being black, which is something that we as people of African descent should never do. Brother, I really agree with what you just said. Due to the fact that here it is, we're talking about a people who was brought into a country and stripped of all knowledge of self and reprogrammed. And we seek the approval or the stamp of the Caucasian, the European, in order for us to exist and to do what we do. We become more European than the European, you know. They are like a uncle, a rich uncle that sent you to college but molested you on a daily basis. So, you know, I make no qualm about who I deal with. I recognize them as being a genetic mutation of me, the African. I know for a fact that they mean us no good. And I know for a fact that our children, this so-called Generation X, is going to be Generation Extinct if we don't get a grip on them and they don't get a grip on themselves. We will actually have a generation of people, man, that's like what this Halloween weekend, zombies, you know. So, gentlemen, what do you think of that?
Ashe, that's correct.
I 100% agree. That's all I see is following up behind someone and getting mesmerized by their BS, thinking that's reality. We live in a fantasy world. You know, you got a lot of us to go ahead and don't want to go ahead and look at what's happening in front of them. I mean, I disagree with a lot of people when they say, I don't have a TV in my house, I don't look at the news. I think you should, and then go ahead and weigh that out, what they're saying, you know, to reality. So I think that we should always go ahead and do that, because that's their message, that's their code box to go ahead to others to go ahead and do, you know, ridiculous stuff to us. And we've been talking about abuses, and that during the slave period, that was the biggest way they can control a lot of us. They break a lot of us in front of the rest of the other people. I hate using them terms, but it's kind of getting emotional. But you know, they would go ahead and do that, and sodomizing the big male. No, the big tough one was always a good thing for them to go ahead and maintain that control. You know, it was called.
Well, but you know what, gentlemen, what we have to really, really do, you know, we have to look at their history as a people in general. Look at their, you know, art says a lot about your culture and who you are. If we look at European sculptures and the artwork, the paintings of the so-called greats, it's all, you know, nudity. It's nothing but nudity. It's an obsession with the human body with these people. We have to look at the fact that these folks did not just start doing this. You know, our folks have become more European than the European when it comes down to this this homosexuality, this you know, and I'm not apologizing for that either, for saying this, is because to me it's not righteous. It's not at all, because of the fact that how can I, as a minister, how could I, as a historian, condone and say that it's okay in order to be politically correct, when here it is, our people, man, in slavery, young men and young women, little boys and little girls were sodomized, man. I mean, you know, these people, man, you see it every day. Look at what's in the media today. When you control the media, you control the mindset of the people. And now every time you turn on the TV, it is suggested that you accept homosexuality in all of these little TV series and everything. And then in order to get it accepted, they turned around and took the Civil Rights Bill and said that it's a civil rights movement. Come on now.
You know, something else, man. You know, like when they, you know, the control and the mindset, the thing that stands out to me is that a lot of our people, their minds are so controlled that they don't even want to go ahead and look at reality. Or go ahead and make sense of what they see. They just accept that as fact. That's
what it's
always.
Stockholm syndrome.
Say it again.
You know what Stockholm syndrome is, right?
Right.
It's being in love with your captors. And for us to condone this way of life that these people have perpetrated upon us, man. I mean, I remember, again, I throw the 60 out there. It's not. I'm acting like I'm 90-something years old, huh? But I throw the 60 out there because of the fact that I remember as a young man that the only time we even heard about gays or homosexuals or whatever was around Halloween. They would have this ball, and black folks and other folks would run to, you know, see, it's almost like this gay pride parade that they have every year.
Yeah, it seemed like it came,
you know,
from that body, man.
Yeah.
You know, the only part I don't like about it, man, it's near my birthday, and I'd be like, oh, shit, I can't go nowhere.
You know, and understand me good, man. You know, I've had relatives who are gay, the whole nine yards.
Me too.
You understand what I'm saying? And
yeah, me too.
The
thing
I'm not talking about a gay issue. I'm talking about the misogynism, man, the effects of the slave master raping black men. Nobody has ever addressed it, that raping black women, raping children, you know, having these perverted types of relationships with these people who already you consider as cattle. So if they considered us three-fifths of a man and a monkey, then what they were into then, bestiality? You understand my
and they
point?
I understand it perfectly, and you're right on point. They did insinuate it. They didn't say it or demonstrate it outright, but they insinuated it. I think it was Mandingo or Drum, one of those two movies, and when they had the bed warmers, the little children would be warming the white man's foot, pulling the rheumatism out of their legs, and I knew what that
right,
was.
Yeah, right, exactly.
The other one was Goodbye Uncle Tom was the only one that actually dealt with it.
Wait a minute. That, you said leg warmers?
Foot warmers and removing gout from the white man by
putting his feet on his stomach. What were they doing?
They had the baby. They had the young babies, the boys particularly, at the foot of the bed where the slave master would put his feet on his stomach, and they would be in that room for hours pulling the rheumatism, supposedly, out of the white man. But even as a child, I knew that was kind of gay. Like, why you got the little boy in your bed?
And in the film Mandingo, they have the In the film Mandingo, they have the young brother, the slave master, is sitting on the porch, and he has this young child, no more than 7, 8 years old. The boy is just sick and tired of this man. When he sees him, he goes to say, "Oh, I got so much of it in me," you know, trying to tell him to let him go. And the boy lays down, man, and this man takes his shoes off, man, and he puts his feet on the boy because he's trying to get this arthritis or gout or you name it, whatever disease he said was in him, this child was supposed to draw this out of him, man. You know.
So. And that was actually symbolic of their mental, spiritual sickness, that they were trying to drain all of that into us. And if you look at European culture, you find the scapegoat syndrome that was a normal cultural practice of most Europeans, to where annually, kind of like Mardi Gras or kind of like Carnival and all that, annually they would send a goat through the community and attach all of its sins onto the goat and then run the goat out of town.
You know, Eric Holder said it best recently when he first got his position. He said that when it comes to race in America, America is a bunch of cowards. And
He sure did.
You know, and this is something, man, that folks do not address. I mean, what's the problem with it? What's the problem with addressing? Because what would happen, it would bring up all of this pervertedness. It would bring up all of these allegations of misuse. And, you know, the reason why black folks really don't like to see black folks popping their eyes or poking their lips out or whatever is because what that does for them, it reminds them of how they lynched us and how our eyes popped out and how the lips poked out and the neck was twisted. You know, it wasn't just a shine act. This was a constant, that code you talked about earlier, Chef. You know, they're code talkers. They're better than the tribe of Indians, the code talkers. You know, now they have their own code.
Right.
You know, and it's subtle racism now.
You know what? I had that. I had a clip dude was talking about that, man. Y'all really need to hear this. But I want you to listen to this Michael Jackson thing here, too. Hold on. Give me a quick one.
Yeah, go ahead.
To be here. I'm not just fighting for myself, I'm fighting for all artists. Those great artists who pioneered, you know, entertainment business as well as songwriting as well as incredible staging. You know, the fact that they have been taken by the system, totally broken them financially. You know, and this has to stop the conspiracy.
They made and created so much joy for the world. And the system, meaning the record companies, totally took advantage of them. And it's not like they always say, you know, they built a big house, they spent a lot of money, they bought a lot of cars. That's stupid, the excuse. That's nothing compared to what artists make. And I just need you to know that this is very important, what we're fighting for. Because I'm tired of the manipulation. I'm tired of how the press is manipulating everything that's been happening in this situation. They do not tell the truth. They're liars. They manipulate our history books. The history books are not true. It's a lie. The history books are lies. You need to know that. You must know that. The minute I started breaking the all-time record in record sales, I broke Elvis' record. I broke Doodle's record. The minute it became the all-time best-selling album in the history of the Guinness Book of World Records, overnight, they called me a freak. They called me a homosexual. They called me a child molester. They said I tried to bleach my skin. They made everything to turn the public against me. This is all complete, complete conspiracy. You have to know that.
Greetings, welcome back to the show. That was Michael Jackson who was talking about how they manipulated our history, changed, and they were coming at him. You know, and I found a few other of them clips, and that's some of the stuff that also needed to be put out. You know, but he was saying, you know, they were destroying our history. So, you know, he was pointing that out, and Phil ain't getting it. What do you brother feel about that? You know, Michael Jackson on point? Was he working on something? Was he trying to tell everybody something? Did he have a message?
I think Michael Jackson was grossly underestimated for the level of intelligence he had. And being that intelligent and immersed in the entertainment world at such a young age, and with the force of Joe Jackson on his ass, it was an interesting combination. And I think his intelligence was highly underestimated because he was able to do things most artists to this day can't do. He owned half of Sony. I mean, none of them could do that.
Yeah. And you know something else, Chef? How soon after that, because he was with Al Sharpton in New York when he did that, and how soon after did Michael Jackson die?
A lot of people
don't realize that. I'm glad you did play that clip because he owned the Beatles, all of, you know, he had their whole catalog. Paul McCartney was pissed off with Michael Jackson for having that catalog with all of the songs that he and his comrades had basically done. And LaToya at one time kind of mentioned in so many words that she felt like McCartney and Sony and some of those other had Michael, you know, taken out because they knew, you know, the so-called addiction to drug or whatever.
Hold on, brother. I want you to finish that, but I got a clip of her saying exactly the same thing, and I wish I had brought that one out. You know, it was sitting over there. I couldn't download it, but she was saying the same thing, and I got something else of I think of Janet was also kind of mentioning some stuff too. Sisters was talking.
Yeah, but you know, all of a sudden they told her, you know, to shut up. You know, it's amazing, man, that fear is the greatest tool that these folks have ever used toward us. To number one, if you get a man to fear dying, then you have conquered him. But if he turns around and he says that, you know, I'm willing to give my life for this cause instead of because, then now you have a hell of an adversary. Look at the World War II with the kamikaze pilots. Man, I mean, this was a force to be reckoned with. Look at the people that they're having problems with now who say, hey, I can't wait to see Allah.
When I read something where the United States Army going up against the Indians, it took like maybe three to five white man to go ahead and catch this Indian. If they can hunt him down, then they had to go ahead and capture him, or they had to kill him. Because if it was hand-to-hand combat, you know, the white boys was losing.
You know, they tried to perpetrate that fraud with the film Shaka Zulu. I was given rites of passage by the Swaziland Zulu and given my African name, and I never forget Brother Salo Mkalipe told me, he said, man, Shaka never saw a white man in his life. He said that whole film was a fraud to show the invincibility. It was propaganda, you know, to show that the British were supposed to be this great force to be reckoned with. Then when the bottom line is, Shaka basically told his brother, after his brother dethroned him, if anybody, he told them that there would be a great pale serpent come from the sea with blue eyes to be aware of. The brother spoke in metaphor telling his brother this. But the movie Shaka Zulu, you know, when you control the mindset of the people, man, you control their thinking, you control the outcome of these people. When you educate them people, that's their greatest tool, is educating us. You know, from them educating us to what they want us to know, we got a problem, man, because we automatically, subliminally, stamp of approval on some of the things that they do to us because we have been indoctrinated to their way of life.
Oh, man. Another clip I need to play, that Jesse Lee Peterson. Yeah, my next show, I'm going to go ahead and throw that out there. That Jesse Lee Peterson is saying, hey, you know, he did. Thank the white man for bringing, for slavery, for bringing us here. Look at Africa. It's so terrible. I was like, get out of here. This dude, man,
and,
you
and
got
I was
to hear this.
Too.
Mm-hmm. Say it again. Yeah, you got
I was
the,
just
you got
say
the
my...
But let me play this one real fast. You know, that addresses some of those, some of our people.
And so this morning, and the time has been allotted to me, I want to talk to you, as I said, like Geronimo, but I want to be like the great European philosopher Diogenes, who walked through life with a lantern in his hand, saying, I want to lighten the darkness because I'm in search of an honest man. But like Diogenes, I want to walk through this temple and through Black America with a new movement I'm trying to create. I want to find not necessarily an honest man. I want to find some black people and some white people that understand the problems in America. I want to find somebody that understands in America that contrary to popular myths, black folk are not progressing in America. Black people are going backwards. In comparative proportional terms, black people in America, where you were in 1850 in this country, you have not progressed. You're still in your same dilemma, contrary to anybody tells you. And it seems I want to find, like Diogenes, I want to find a black person that understands that black folk are not progressing. But more importantly, I want to find somebody, black or white, that don't mind being black and want to talk about the racial problem in this society. I can't even find that with my lantern in life. We got three or four major black organizations in America. Three. The Urban League, NAACP, the Rainbow Coalition, and one other one. I can't even get them to focus on the issue of black folk. One wants to take care of cultural diversity. One wants to be talking about multiculturalism. One wants to talk about minority issues. The other wants to talk about oppressed people. And I asked them across the country, why don't somebody talk about black folk and the problems of black people? And so I'm looking like the Ajani for a person that understands the history of this country, because I want to understand the problem in America. And the problem is not what you all have been taught. The problem is not poverty. It is not unemployment. It is not unwed teenage parents. It is not food stamps. It's not public housing. It is not drug abuse. Black people only got two problems in America. The first problem is that you've been systematically locked into the lowest level of a real-life monopoly game. That's your major problem. And that's what Dr. Price directly and indirectly is telling you about every Sunday morning. You have been locked into a no-win situation. That means that all the wealth and power in this country has been skewed over 400 years systematically into the hands of the majority white society. Black people don't own a significant amount of anything to be able to control their lives. Whites in America right now control almost 100% of all the income, the wealth, the power, the resources, the businesses, the privileges, and all levels of government. You cannot compete. And I'm tired of hearing people telling black folk, why don't you compete? Compete with what? What are you going to compete with? They keep saying, well, black folk can run fast and jump higher. That won't make it. It won't make it. And let me tell you what monopoly is. Monopoly means that all the wealth and power has been skewed based on skin color, going white, yellow, brown, black. And if you've never played the game of Monopoly, let me show you how it's played. I play it every year at my family. It means that everybody, when you sit down, you're given a certain amount of money and wealth. Black people never got their 40 acres and a mule. Now we're playing this game of Monopoly. And let's pretend for a second in this auditorium that whites got $1,000 to play the game of Monopoly. Asians got $500. Hispanics got $300. Indians got $100. And blacks got $50 to play the game of Monopoly. Now, never having gotten your 40 acres of mule, you don't own any land. You don't own any land. And if you don't have the money, you can't put any houses and hotels on the land if you got lucky and had some. Now, when you roll the dice in our hypothetical game of Monopoly, and you roll the dice and your number comes up on the wrong piece of property, what happens to you? You must either go bankrupt or go to jail. And that's the Monopoly game that black folk are locked into. And when that happens to you in life, when you only got two alternatives in life to either go bankrupt or go to jail, that is called an underclass. And black people in America are systematically being forced into a permanent underclass. We will be a permanent underclass by the year 2013. And you got about a 2.5-year window left. If we don't do some very specific things and start to come up with some very cogent strategies, comprehensive strategies of doing some things to focus on that number one problem of redistributing the wealth and power back into the hands of black folk, you can hang it up. Don't worry anymore about retiring. After the next 2 or 3 years, don't worry anymore about going to college. It ain't going to work. The doors are going to slam shut on black folk. And what I'm telling you right now is we're going to have to get it together fast. And to do it, you must first understand what I'm going to be telling you this morning. And my speech is going to be divided into three parts. I'm first going to tell you about the problems of black America realistically. As Co-Chief and Geronimo said, I'm going to give you the truth about the current state of black America, point one. Two, I'm going to analyze it for you. And three, I'm going to give you the solutions that we can do together to come out of it. Okay? Now, we got a very serious problem in that Monopoly game. We're going to have a converging forces, social forces coming across this country. About 8 major forces are going to push us into that understructure and that underclass position. And let me talk about 3 or 4 of them right quick. First thing, across this country, you're going to have an increasing amount of conservatism. Now, I want you all to understand up front what conservatism means. So I don't care whoever uses that word, you know what it means. Conservatism is a new code word for anti-blackism. Okay? Except now, a conservative can stand right in your face and call you, tell you, and confess that he's a conservative, which means he is a racist and not tell you he's a racist. Racism right now, we got racism all over America, and I can't find one racist. And what I'm telling you right now, before my book even hit the market, I'd already predicted in my book that you're going to have a cutback in welfare. I predicted in my book they're going to catch people like in Texaco. And they just caught Avis discriminating against blacks in North Carolina, South Carolina. And they just caught Circuit City, Sam's, Walmart. I knew they were going to try to cut out the single amendment district. I knew they were going to go after affirmative action. I knew there were going to be riots all over this country that are coming. I talked about this a long time ago in the book, because that's what conservatism means. Conservatism comes from the root word to conserve. To conserve means to hold on to what you've got, or those who ain't got, as my mother said, a third grade deaf education, you ain't going to get. That's what conservatism means. And it means nothing else. It means maintain the status quo. It means use every device that you have to give the pretense that what you see is normal. And right now there's a conservative move in this country going from the White House across this land to the Congress that says whatever exists all over this nation and in Los Angeles is normal. They want you to believe that it's normal to go out in Los Angeles and see all the drug abuse and all the crime, all the poverty, and all the suffering of black folks lying and sleeping on the streets, drugged out, doped out. They want you to believe that's normal. That's what conservatism means, maintain the status quo. It also means to reinstitute white authority, white values, so you hear them talk about family values and all these other kind of things, and also white superiority. So when people start talking about they want to go back and be a conservative, you ask them, what are you trying to conserve? When my people don't own anything and you own 100%, what have I got to conserve? When you hear blacks going around screaming about they're a black conservative, you ask them, what are you conserving? Tell me one point in history that you found something that you want to conserve. Don't let people run that game on you about being a conservative. You tell them, fine, you want to tell me what are you conserving? And when my people never had anything, why would they want to be a conservative? So the biggest problem we're going to have is conservatism when it goes across this nation. And we as black folk got to understand, now it's not all whites that are conservatives. There is an element that's got everything. They want to make their, it's the greed over need. They want to hold on to everything. And so, and we're going to have a massive flow. Everybody's going to be talking about conservatism. You're going to see people politically switching, talking about they're moving to the far right. And what we have to do is understand that, and that's going to create major problems in this country. One, you're going to, not only will you see an increasing amount of negative hostility towards black folk, every piece of research in the country tells us that, even from the Jewish organizations, that you're going to see more anti-blackness now and in the future than you've ever seen in the last 60 years since you left the civil rights movement. Two, you're going to see, we see organizations all over the country now, paramilitary groups, Aryan groups, Vipers, Free Man, Skinhead, Baldhead, all kind of groups that are organizing and optimistically expecting and anticipating a major clash in this country between blacks and whites. We've had 28 states in the United States now to pass concealed weapons laws. That's specifically so some of the white contingency groups can carry weapons and arms at all times. That's why you have such a major thrust in the National Rifle Association. That's why they're controlling most of your politicians. That's why you have such a major anti-governmental effort in this country. You hear people say, we want to go back to states' rights. We're anti-government. We want to get rid of the federal government. It's not that they're against government. They know that in history, the only people who've ever saved black folk has been the government, twice, the federal government. And if you eliminate the federal government by downsizing the government, black folk no longer have an ally. And if a clash occurs, you got nobody to come to the rescue a third time to help you. You see, you were pulled out of slavery by the federal government. You were pulled out of Jim Crowism by the federal government. There are contingencies in the country that says the next time there won't be a federal government to pull blacks out. And you hear them talk about their anti-government. That's what they're talking about. They're not against government. And later on you hear me tell about why they're not against government. Because you see, primary wealth in this country, the primary responsibility of government is to move wealth and to move power. And that's how the dominant society got its wealth and its power, by using government. But now they want to make sure black folks don't have access to it. That's why they're anti-affirmative action, but I'll get into all that a little later.
Greetings and welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. So, brothers, you can go ahead and jump into that any way you want to.
I find that most interesting, and I'll let the guests go ahead and speak, but I just wanted to make a quick comment. My friend told me on the, you know, I do a co-hosting of the Cypher on War on the Horizon Radio on Tuesday night at 7 o'clock Eastern. And one of the things that Brother DJ said was, and he got it from somebody else, I'm sure, but he said that the eyesight does not take place through the eyes. It takes place in the mind. And that when someone controls your mind, they control how you see things. And I thought that was really profound. And the other thing is I love love Dr. Carl Anderson. He's brilliant, simply brilliant. The one thing I differ with him is no white folks have a chance of ever giving a damn about your nigga ass. That's the one thing I think. And I think he politically says that so that he doesn't become irrelevant to the white constituency that's still around him.
Well, I really agree with the conservatism, you know, to conserve. I mean, e plurimus unum, you know, that's one out of many. This is one way of life chosen by this few, you know, these people. I mean, you know, it's nothing really so profound, you know, that I really feel he just said, because it's always been there. That has always been there. The only thing I could respond to everything he just said is what I mentioned to, I think you today, Chef, and some other brothers the other day, AFRICOM. Just go online and type in AFRICOM.
Oh, and I know about it.
Huh?
I know about it.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
It's amazing, you know. So the thing that get me with our people is why are we so surprised when whatever happens? This is nothing new. You know, this is nothing new. For us, the ages that we are right now, to know this and to have this revolutionary spirit and this pride in who we are, whatever, we got this because as children we heard the elders talk about it. And those elders heard the elders talk about it. And those elders. So this is, you know, it's nothing new. Carter G. Woodson, man, just to read his book, you would think you were reading something that he wrote today.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, Booker T.
On that thing about, you know, once you control a man's thinking, you can control his action.
Oh, damn, Malcolm.
Yeah,
Malcolm,
you know,
he stripped a man of his culture. He's no longer a man. I mean, this is nothing. This is, man, it doesn't amaze me anymore. You know, when I turn on television and hear what they say happened, but I tell you what does amaze me, man, this warrior spirit that rides on the coattail of hurricanes, man, that came and sunk the Bounty. You know, I don't know if you saw what I put on Facebook, Chef, the other day, but each one of those townships that hurricane went to, this super storm they called it or whatever, each one of those townships it went to, man, each one of those places were prominent ports for slavery. And then the Bounty itself, the HMS Bounty that was sunk behind the storm, was a slave ship that went to get a certain type of fruit that was cheap in order to feed the slaves. So, you know, a lot of people don't realize that right off the Ivory Coast, man, is where these hurricanes come from. It crosses that Middle Passage. You know what I'm saying?
Man, and I was trying to explain that to this one sister from Africa. She was like, no, it doesn't. I said, yes, it does. They generate from over there, and they sweep right across over here.
The thing that I have with my African brothers, man, is for a long time I used to just ask the question, and then I sent the question to Cornel West, and I sent it to Skip Gates and asked them the same question, and nobody would answer. And the simple question was, what was the name of Africa before Cipriano Africanus and the Portuguese and all of them changed it? And couldn't nobody tell me, man. But
has anyone ever been able to tell you?
Yeah, when Hidden Colors come out, man, and they said it was Al-Kabilan, it was Ethiop, you know, I mean, and they were talking about it, and to see this, I was like, okay.
Because there was another name that probably wasn't included that I just learned of probably 2 years ago, and that is Merita, or Ta Merita, and this is coming from the Dogon people, and it's the Kemetic name of the land, which would be Ta Meri or Merita, same word.
But you see my point, man, is to this day, even though we know this, the first thing fall about out of our mouth still is Africa. So when the elders used to turn around and say, boy, you know you're born into sin, they were absolutely right. For you to turn around
every year you jump up in August and the 11th on a Monday and celebrate your birthday. You're celebrating Moon for Monday, you know, Augustus. You know, I mean, you see my point?
Yeah.
We unconsciously carry this European spirit, ideology, and everything. There is nothing original about the black man that walks this earth until now, finding out who the hell he is. And then he's still fighting with himself because, again, this damn Stockholm syndrome our ass is so caught up into, that we are so in love with our captors, man. If we went and robbed a bank, we'd rob it just like Bonnie and Clyde instead of Bush, Rod, and Thomasine. You know. So, you know, it's a hell of, man, we in a hell of a position, brother.
Yeah, I noticed. Hold on, I got another caller. Somebody's got their hand up. 708-663, your line is open. State your name. Where you calling from?
Hotel, brother.
Robert
S. calling from the minimum security prison of Chicago. Some
okay.
areas are maximum security. Hotep, brother. Some areas are maximum security, but I don't know. I live in Roseland, so I guess you can call that maximum security.
What's up, Robert?
However, I've never felt threatened walking out of my house in Roseland. Hotep to the brothers. Listen, I agree with some of the things that, as you well know, brother, that Claude Anderson is talking about. As a matter of fact, but some things I disagree. We fought, maybe that's not a good choice of words, we disagreed with William Julius Wilson when he coined that phrase back in the 80s, late 80s, about 88, 89, somewhere in there, the permanent underclass. And he wrote a book that basically highlighted that. And we basically disagreed with him tooth and nail about even putting our people in that status. Because like so many other things, and this is why I don't get caught up in the slavery piece, because it's very easy to start our history there and omit all the other stuff that basically inspires greatness. Okay? And so I never get caught up in the slavery thing because I understand white supremacy. So, you know, just listen to what the brother was saying. I can agree with a lot of what the brother was saying as well. But I think, brother, on a different vein, I think that much of what affects us is an absence of a spiritual foundation. Because if you don't have that, which basically governs your culture, you can possibly relate to each other in a respectful manner. Because if you believe in one thing and I believe in another, that's the basis for conflict. But that's where we find ourselves today. So for me, and Brother Rob, you know I'm always talking this since you and I were first introduced to each other. I think that whatever we do has to be based or rooted in African spirituality. And I'm going to tell you something. I've been studying African spirituality nonstop this entire year. And some of the things that I've come across, brother, you have to be deaf, dumb, and blind not to want to align yourself with this particular spectrum of power. It is unbelievable. So when we tell people that the current paradigm of white supremacy in terms of its scientific aspect rests in the area of quantum physics, everybody understands or everybody hears that word quantum physics. But when you turn around and you're able to show them piece by piece that quantum physics is nothing more than a synthetic version, and I do mean synthetic because we're dealing with a synthetical nature here. Everything these people create, it's an artificial version of what's real. Okay? So when you tell and are able to show our people the relationship between quantum physics and metaphysics,
my brother,
and that metaphysics is in fact the foundation of African and all other spiritual concepts, It just absolutely blows their mind. I'm talking about.
Yes, it does.
I'm talking about point blank on the streets. I think these are the things that our people need to really understand, and it will move us away from the synthetic nature of worshiping things outside of us, including individuals. Because if you see yourself as a manifestation of the God force, chances are you're going to act like a God. When you don't, any actions choose. And again, I think that's the foundation from which we need to begin to deal with the problems that affect African people.
You know, it's amazing you would say that, brother. I remember, man, at 11 years old, my mother taking me on the South Side to this little storefront. And the brother's name was Professor Macklin. And he talked about metaphysics and the charts he had on the wall, man. It was the human body. And then he showed what would be in the, what we saw in the Bible and how the whole story and everything was, you know, this one. You know, and it's amazing. You don't hear too many of our people talking about metaphysics these days.
I think that's because the level of ignorance outside of Blog Talk, because I must give Blog Talk kudos for this. Blog Talk has introduced metaphysics on a much broader scale than perhaps anywhere else you'll find. If you tune into regular radio, regular Black Talk radio anywhere in the country, you won't hear it. You're going to get Jesus 24 hours a day, okay, because that's a reflection of the synthetic nature from which many of our people derive their consciousness from. They basically do nothing more than parrot the system of white supremacy. If white supremacy doesn't put its stamp of approval on it, then it's not valid. And so in many respects, the current people who are in position to influence our people are in fact co-conspirators in our own demise.
Well, you know, when you have taken the slave and you inoculate him, man, with what you need him to say, you know, when we hear about the Willie Lynch syndrome and some people try to dispute it and say, oh, that was this, that, and the other, we self-maintain this European ideology forever. I mean, it's Rommel, what's his name with Adolf Hitler, Minister of Propaganda, Goebbels. Couldn't have done better when it came down to our people, man. And we do this on the, I understand exactly what you're saying. I understand exactly what you're saying, and I totally agree. That's the problem. Until we can actually break totally away from this ideology, this understanding of what this European has given us, and re-educate. You know, I'm going to tell you my wife. My wife told me something. She said when she began to study religion all over, she said she forgot everything that she was taught. You see my point? You have to totally almost do exactly what that European did when they brought you here. You have to almost torture yourself. You know, that's a strange way of saying it. Not, you know, physically beating you, but beat your mind back out of the submission of what that this individual has done to you. Wipe your mind clean and educate yourself to the truth. You know, you can dress the truth up, man, in a tuxedo, but you can't change it. You cannot change it. You know, and it's there, and it's something else, man. When we talk with our young people, when we talk to, you go into a church, and it's the same drama, you know, with the ministers. I never forget reading Booker T. Washington and how he talked about that there was a church that he attended. He said there was about 60-something people in the church, and a good 58 of them, man, were ministers. So everybody wanted to get a piece of the pie. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, sir.
And that's a hell thing, man, to drop on the people that here it is, you have organized religion to continue to enslave our people, man.
It is sad, brother, and you can see it if you just step back from the whole thing and you take a look at what's going on critically. You can see the church being one of the prime culprits in the situation that we find ourselves in today.
Man, at 13 years old, I couldn't wait to get out of school. My mother sent us to Catholic school. Number one, they were speaking in Latin. Didn't understand a daggone thing they said. But you had the parent signed a piece of paper saying that we allow you to beat our child, to inoculate him with this Catholicity, and then at the same time we turned our children over to you for 8 to 9 hours daily.
And considered it as a pedophilia.
Yeah, you know, exactly, my brother. And see, that's what the conversation started about earlier. The fact is that lately, within the last 10 to 15 years, it has come out about the Catholic Church and how it rapes young men. And they haven't hit the nuns yet. You see what I'm saying? They haven't hit the nuns yet. If that came out, it would really be a thing. But the bottom line is, if that is happening in this organization of men who are a sovereign country within a city itself, how far back do that shit go, man? You feel
how about
the
origins?
How about its origins?
Yes, sir.
You know, we're talking all the way back, man, to Constantine. I mean, not Constantine, but King James, who, with not a doubt, they tell you point blank, was a homosexual. So, come on.
Doesn't seem to bother us, brother.
No,
and it's,
man,
like,
I mean, we there paying tithes every Sunday.
Well, you know, I'm going to do something here with your permission, Chef.
Go ahead.
You still? I'm going to do what I normally do when I'm a guest on a radio program or I call in. I don't like to just call in and talk. I like to leave the people who may download one of your programs an informational package where they can go and get things that will help them vibrate on a different level in terms of understanding just what it is that we're fighting here. Because I always say, I'm not quite sure our people really understand the nature of the beast. We say we do. I'm not quite so sure we do. So with that, brother, if everybody would go to the Mail Online, this is the Mail Online for May the 18th, 2012, you will find an article titled, Thai Police Arrest Man with Suitcase Full of Gold-Plated Babies Set to Be Used in Black Magic Ritual, Smuggling into Britain for the Upper Classes, of which Tony Blair and his wife are major components. You can Google that, too. All right?
What is that again? Go back up.
See, that's why you have to download your own program and get this information. Thai police arrest man with suitcase full of gold-plated babies set to be used in black magic ritual.
Gold-plated babies.
Yes, sir. This is the nature of the people that we deal with. Let me go on here. Here's another one, same newspaper, Mail Online, coming out of Britain. For May the 7th, 2012, thousands of pills filled with powdered human baby flesh discovered by customs officials in South Korea. Okay? Here's another one, and you'll find this extremely interesting. And it relates to those other two articles, which will give justification for why these people are focusing on young flesh. And then we'll come back here to this country, and you'll understand why they're focusing on young flesh here. This is, again, the Mail Online for May the 20th, 2011.
And that's
British
Royal M-A-L-E?
M-A-I-L. Mail Online.
Okay, regular mail.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. British royalty dined on human flesh, but don't worry, it was 300 years ago. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the last one, again, from the Mail Online, October 27, 2011. Blue Bloods. Prince Charles joins campaign to save Transylvania's forest because of his family connections to Count Dracula. Okay? Now, what is all that saying? Every single one of those articles point to a level of degeneracy at the very upper echelon in British society and by extension in this society, such that not more than 2 weeks ago, three at the most, very interesting article came out which pointed to the fact, and you can Google this as well, that youthful blood injected into elderly people seems to give them newfound life. Now, understand all that within the context of all these white people traveling all over the world adopting black babies.
Oh, there you go now, brother, we're talking. Yeah.
And that
not only adopting black babies, but going over there and living in Africa to become citizens of Africa, to lay claim on Africa. But you know, just to say this before I forget, in America now, to show you that this has happened here already.
Yes, sir.
Wayne Williams. You remember Wayne Williams?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay. Interferon, you're familiar with that?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Don't you remember when all of a sudden there were black children missing and Wayne Williams caught the case? But when they found some of the black males who were missing, the head of their penises was cut off.
That
and then
correct.
We heard about this drug called interferon, which they state the main ingredients from that was in the male penis.
That is correct. I remember
giving
a lecture on that back in the early 80s.
So, I mean,
yes,
it's nothing new because now you can actually buy products now, man, with melanin. Now, who has melanin?
Well, actually, all of us do, but we have a higher concentration of it.
Yes, and that's my point. You know, there was a DVD, brother, let me get, man, and somebody stole it because of the fact. And it talked about how a lot of black men, when they are killed, you know, here in the United States, the first thing that's missing, if you actually went and looked at the bodies of these black men, when they go to the coroner's office, that part of the Abdullah Oblongata is missing.
Yes.
Because of, you're following where I'm going with this?
Yes, sir.
You know, it is something else that they know the greatness of our blood, our DNA, the whole nine yards, man. It's not just all of a sudden this has come out. These folks have been experimenting on us forever. That's why Magic Johnson is able to get the good drug for HIV/AIDS because of this money, you see, when the cure for cancer has already been there forever, you know, because they have experimented on our people. We are the guinea pigs. You know, Africa
so
is
brother,
the petri dish.
I don't have the article in front of me, but you can Google this. A recent article that just came out, now again, not more than 3 weeks ago, with a brother in Africa who has come forth with the trials, okay, with the people, pointing to the fact that he's used natural herbs along with, don't quote me on it. Again, I'm not looking at the article, and I'm preparing for something totally different this Saturday, so this is coming off the top of my own with that. I don't like to do, but I will. Mistaken, it may be mustard. No, bananas.
Mm-hmm.
The prime ingredients is banana. And he has basically eradicated the AIDS virus. And you got the white people down there right now. Study methodology. using nothing but natural herbs, and I can't even quote you, okay, because my mind has just been immersed in the ley line in terms of the form that we get involved in, connecting the ley lines on the planet, the ley lines in the human body, and the ley lines in the cosmos that dictate all movement, okay? And that the reason you hear me talking about African spirituality so tough is because we run across the fact that the reason that they're focusing so much minds of African people in terms of attempting to control them is because they clearly understand that we become spiritually oriented again, we will have the capacity to relight, using our minds, the spiritual centers that exist all over this planet known as ley lines. Okay? This is the power of the African mind up to an including, brother. In the mystery system, only certain number of the chosen adepts, the people who were allowed into the mystery school, were allowed to study certain things, particularly the dodecahedron. Some call it the fifth element, or the ether, which is where the Akashic record of past, present, and future resides, which is being synthetically tapped into using the superconductor, supercollider, in terms of the so-called God particle, which exists in the ether. But our people were not only aware of these things, but they understood the power of the dodecahedron and its capacity to produce nuclear explosions. So only certain adepts, only the chosen of the chosen, have access to this kind of information. And so when you hear me say, like, this stuff is mind-blowing, trust me, brothers, it is absolutely mind-blowing what our people were able to accomplish in ancient Kemet. It is unbelievable. And as we continue to study, brother, we found that the relationship between male and female, again, understanding the nature of the womb and the penis, was in fact, when the two got together through sexual experience, egg meets sperm, that's the equivalent of a biological nuclear explosion. This is how tough our people were. This is how in-depth the understanding of our relationship between everything on the planet and everything off the planet and everything in us was. The problem, and as I've been able to see it, just as the problem is now, we tend to want to move away from that which is us to identify with things that have absolutely nothing to do with us just for the sake of saying we are part of something.
Just for conversation, brother.
Republican, conservative, liberal, it's all white. And as such, it perpetuates white supremacy. And I tell everybody, white supremacy is not inclusive. If it allows blacks in, those blacks operate just like whites. Period.
Well, you know what? There's an organization called Boulay. Masonic organization, Boulay.
Let me stop you one second, brother.
Yeah, go ahead.
My mentor, Steve Coakley. He's the one who broke the Boulay. I studied under Steve Coakley from 1981.
There you go, brother. So you know where I'm at with that.
No,
I'm just saying, you see where I'm at with that, man. So, you know, just to be able to say you're a part, you know, it is something else, man, to see all these young brothers, man, that run around and join the Masonic Order and this, that, and another, you know, to say that they are part of, you know,
just to be a part, man. I mean, the vice lords, the Roman saints. I mean, it's nothing but being a part of something. But when it comes down to the spirituality of the whole deal, I ask them in a minute, do they have a 401k plan? You know, do they have insurance? Come on.
Hey, hold on a minute.
It's mind blowing.
Let me play this clip real quick and set you guys up for something.
And Chef, I'm gonna have to get off in a minute.
Our crisis today, the crisis in Somalia, the crisis in Africa, the crisis in the Caribbean islands, the crisis in the United States, that we have lost from our historical memory the time when we were in charge of the state and when we ruled the state, that the methodology taken out of our mind and not the mind of a foreigner, a faker, and a fool. When independence came to Africa, when the concept of independence came to the Caribbean islands, when we had our charade called the Civil Rights Movement, nobody was fighting to be totally independent of that former slave master. In some way, we were all crawling to get back on the plantation. We were fighting to consume his hamburger. We were fighting for the right to make our oppressor rich. So we did not understand the nature of liberation. And if you do not understand the nature of liberation, mentally you are still a slave. Now the slavery that we still must grapple with started in the 15th and the 16th century. Slavery started in the world when man emerged in the world and developed a fear and a weakness of other people and felt that they had to enslave another people to feel safe. That was one kind of slavery, but slavery based solely on race, on color. That's the slavery hatched from the European mind in the 15th and the 16th century. For there were periods when Europeans enslaved Europeans, Jews enslaved Jews. Now my focal point is that for most of your existence on this earth, you lived in independent states fashioned by your own mind. And that this great event has been removed from your historical memory. I want you to travel with me just a little while while we go behind that slavery curtain and see what did you do when you were in charge of the state all by yourself. You didn't ask any foreigner to assist you in any way, and you ruled the state exceptionally well. In some places, you ruled so exceptionally well, you had no word for jail in your language because no one had ever gone to one. You create words to describe what happened. If no one ever gone to something called a jail, you don't need a word for one. If you never threw away children, you needed no word for orphanage. If the life between a man and a woman worked and functioned because of the support system coming from both sides of the family, you never heard of a thing called divorce. Well, no one ever got one. You got mixed up with someone else's thing. Now understand me, I have gone over again over cultural incubation. When you come out of a cultural womb, The chemistry of that wound shapes your personality. When someone puts you into another wound, it's like putting you into the stomach of someone who's not your mother. The chemistry of your personality is shaped another way. Therefore, you had no wife beaters in Africa. You had no teenage pregnancy in Africa. So your worst traits were picked up from your oppressor because you were living in a state that you did not fashion. And because the state that you fashioned was removed from your historical memory, when finally you develop semi-independence because you had forgotten how you ruled the state, you became the imitators of the people who put you in that second incubator where the chemistry of your personality changed to suit the slave master's chemistry and not the original chemistry of your birth.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, how was that?
That's my guy. I can't say anything more than that, man. That's my guy. Well, are we still there?
Yeah, we still there.
Okay. I will say this to Brother Ricky. When Steve Coakley broke that stuff on the Secret Society, Sigma Pi Phi, known as the Boule, what happened... And this is very interesting because history will bow out that that brother will go down in history as the one who first and foremost pointed out that there was a well-organized 100-year-old damn organization sworn to protect the system of white supremacy at all costs. That Sigma Pi Phi, the Boule, may not be all of the members, just like in the Messiah. May not be all of the brothers traveling east, but we got to understand the black lodges were considered clandestine lodges and were not considered lodge brothers until the mid to late 1990s.
Right.
Where
right.
the white lodges allowed the black lodges to come into the fold because they were clear in understanding that they were moving towards a world government system. And so that's the first time that they recognized black Masonic lodges as lodge brothers. But I
you
ran
know,
with brothers who created their own lodges. Go ahead, brother.
You know, what I had saw was that they had petitioned to go ahead and come into the order in the 1700s. And then they finally got accepted in, I think it was 1977.
Oh, I've got the. I think if I go down and look in my stack, I'll find the articles. It was the Scottish Rites that finally, you know, allowed them in? Have conversations about breaking down the barriers between the lodges.
Mm.
That was in the 1990s.
Yeah, then Brother Ricky, he dropped off. He had to step out, man.
Mhm. But yeah, Brother Steve. What happened with Brother Steve, man, and this is good reference for all of us, he found out once he broke that many of the people in positions of power here in the city of Chicago were, in fact, Boule. Now, what was interesting was some of the people who were supporting him from the world of academia were Boule. And so he had to make a decision if he was going to stay on the course of doing what he was doing and keep that information to himself, or if he was going to reveal that information, and he chose the latter, and as a result, he began to be ostracized by some of the same people that were supporting him right here in Chicago. You can look all over the country, brother, and that house Negro
who became the educated class, which we now know as Boulé, because that's the lineage. House Negro, educated, Boulé, or gatekeepers. Those people are still placed to this day. And up until the last 15 to 20 years, everywhere you am near in this country, if you had black elected as mayor, if you had a black in a high political or economic position, they were members of Sigma Pi Phi.
Yeah.
Light-skinned black. And you can take outside of this country, and you'll see that same dynamic in the Caribbean. Haiti with all them black people down there,
yeah,
light-skinned black people calling the shots. Trinidad,
right,
same deal. Jamaica, same deal.
Yeah, it is. That's wild. Let me check and see if anybody else wants to chime in on this conversation. 404, your line is open.
Hey, Jackie.
Hey. Hi, Jackie. How you doing?
To the show. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I got you. I got you.
Oh, okay.
What do you think, Sophie? Hello?
Hello?
Oh, okay. The brother was saying it was greeting you.
Yeah, I just said hotel.
Okay, so what do you think so far? What do you think about what you were hearing?
I'm speechless right now. I'm speechless right now.
That's okay. That's okay.
I don't want to say the wrong thing.
What's the wrong thing?
The whole slavery, and there wasn't no slavery in Africa. I, like, disagree with that. But he said it's like it was from one weak group taken over, well, a strong group being taken over by a weak group. And, I mean, you could look at it like that, but I've been studying a lot of African countries lately, and slavery was rampant in Africa because they didn't look at each other like we're black, we're all the same. They looked at each other like, if you're not from my tribe and my tribe is stronger than yours, I have the right to enslave you.
Anybody want to go ahead and comment to that?
Yeah. I think that form of slavery was based on conquest of other tribes, other nations. But this slave based on race was far more insidious. And I think that's what Dr. Clark was talking about. To enslave a people, it would be like your brother is light-skinned, you're dark-skinned, and you enslave your own brother based on the fact that they're light-skinned.
They did that.
Pardon me?
They did that.
So what I'm saying is African people basically enslaved people based their tribal differences, not their racial differences, because there weren't, to any degree, racial differences. We're all black people. The difference was they came from different tribes. That's the nature of mankind since the dawning of man. Tribal warfare.
Well, it's still slavery. They still enslaved people that look like them. And then you have these people that were in the Bantu people when they were in Ethiopia, and they were slaves from other black people that enslaved them. They had the pretty light-skinned Ethiopians. They were slaves, but they were the type of slaves where you could marry them. They weren't expected to do any work, just basically because they looked prettier than the Bantu people. White people even came to the continent. They were practicing this type of slavery. And I have a coworker from Ghana. and he always talks about how he's Ashanti. And basically he says that, you know, in Ghana, if you're not Ashanti, you're just really considered a second-class citizen. So all of these people that think that, oh, I'm going to go to Africa and I'm going to be accepted just because I'm black, I'm like, that's just, like, far from the truth.
Well, again, I won't argue any of that. I have a lot of friends from parts in Africa, and Africa is replete with problems. However, those problems have a genesis. When you talk about Nigeria, it's no accident that you perhaps have more Nigerians here than from any other African country. Why would you think that's the case?
Well, you said more Nigerians here?
Yeah, and Ghanaians. Why would you think those two African countries have more immigrants here than perhaps any other African country?
Well, I don't know about that. I do know that those two countries are they did have a big population. I don't know if they have, you know, more people here than any other African nation. I meet a lot of African people from a lot of places, so I can't say, well, which ones have the biggest minority over here.
Brother Rob, you need to contact one of the African embassies and get somebody on your program. And what you'll find is, those African countries that I named that have more immigrants here than other African countries, the reason that that's the case is because they played ball of the neocolonialists. They exist in the neocolonialist paradigm. Okay? Those countries' leaders were assassinated, and for all practical Negroes, for lack of a better word, were put in control of those African countries, and they do the bidding of the power structure in this country and Britain and France and Belgium and now Israel. So many of the African people we see come here, our people say, well, and you hear this all the time, people don't want to have nothing to do with African people in this country. Well, you cannot judge the nature of African people based on middle-class Africans who bought into the class system, who were allowed to come here. These are not poor Africans. These are not your per capita Africans. And, brother, you've been to the continent, so you know about all the problems that they got there. You think you're on 43rd Street in some situations, just like here, okay? And that's because those countries have been inundated with the system of white supremacy predicated on classism. Now, I'm not saying, nor am I excusing, the behavior of African people who engage in this classism or tribalism, okay? It exists, but those are things African people will have to work out themselves. Just like we've got to work on that same problem right here in this. I'm talking about the blue light. I certainly don't identify with people who sworn allegiance to the maintenance of a system that keep my people in check. But the reality that we find ourselves in. And so I don't quite know, you know, where to go with that, other than I never judge African people based on the Africans I meet here. Most Africans can't find their way outside of their own little neighborhood. Okay,
you know what,
like
brother?
Most...
Let me say this real quick. You know, this is about when people like here in the States, and from me traveling a little bit. When I see those people here from other countries, a lot of times they ain't really real popular back home.
That's right.
A lot of times they are those people who got they snobs and they treat people like crap. That's a lot of them, and I ain't exaggerating. You know, you got that small group of them that's humble and go ahead and respect the people in the street, the person out there, you know, sweeping the street literally with a broom or some rolled up straw. You know, this it's real crazy when I see some people that I don't want to mention the place, but when I see some people come from other countries, man, and when you go back to the country of origin, you be like, man, you know, hey, I don't understand why you act like that in the States. They'll treat black people kind of crappy based on what they've been taught, what they've seen in the media, because they don't portray us well in the media either.
That's extremely powerful, brother. And so, again, as you just stated, I think we would be remiss, you know, in not investigating the situation further. And at this point, in all of our history, I'm talking about Africans abroad as well as Africa in the motherland, I think that it would be well for us to sit down, do a change programs and things of that nature where we get to reconnect with our people at that level, because I think the level of understanding basically for the most part doesn't exist because of these media. If we looked at the media, we would think Africans run around begging people, using broken English, smiling and grinning.
Look, brother. Look, and let me tell you about the flip side. Let me tell you about the other side on how we've been viewed over there.
Right.
They think we all gangsters, all drug dealers, begging, you know, and all of the negative stuff that you see that the ills are in America, that you'd be like, I don't want to push that on nobody. I don't want nobody to see that. You know, let's get rid of that. That's how they show us over there. And then I talk to some people on the continent, man, and some of them don't even have the slightest clue that the slave trade existed. They said we never seen it in the history books. I'm like, man, you got to be kidding me.
No.
So that miseducation is all the way around, man. That miseducation is all the way everywhere.
That's my point.
You know what? One of my coworkers from Ghana, he has a dislike for white people more than any of us. He said that he went in Ghana. They showed him where they kept the slaves and how far they had to walk to go through this dungeon and stuff like that. So I think some people, depending, I don't know what it depends on, but some people over there, they know about the slave trade, but it's different from how they look at it than how we look at it, because they enslave each other based on tribe. We just look at each other like we're all the same because we're all black.
But just like
go ahead, brother.
But just like Dr. Cock was saying, that and you too, brother. You know that this. The slavery based on skin color was a whole different thing. A lot of times when they enslaved each other over there, you pretty much stayed and they didn't treat you as bad. But going ahead and did more of the atrocities based on color. It's almost no equating the two. Slavery was wrong all the way around. But from what I saw,
treated bad.
When Africans enslaved other Africans,
they enslaved people nicely. They didn't. They enslaved people bad. They did.
No, it was violent takeovers. Okay, these are from wars and tribes going here. I agree, and it's even some of that going on today. I agree, but to go ahead and with the white supremacy issue, man. Where like in America, where whites own everything and blacks don't own anything, you know. That's what
we're basically talking about behavior. And what I'm saying is much of the behavior is a byproduct of the system of white supremacy.
I think that's what I'm saying.
Here and there. Because the educational system, they don't know how punitive the system of slavery was here, and the two can never be equated. So we're talking about tens of millions of African people that were literally slaughtered, okay? No record, nowhere, to my experience, in my research, have I seen the same kind of thing go on in Africa. Millions. Those people were captured and made subjects of the people that they were captured by. That's totally different than the mass rape, murder, mutilation, and just anything you can name, all the way up to and including today, is just being done in a different form. We can take what's happening to us here and let's go and examine what's going on with the various conflicts that are going on in Africa, and you'll find almost to the letter every single one of those conflicts that's going on in Africa are being facilitated by white people today. And so if you look at it on the, you'll say, well, those African people just killing each other because they're Christians and Muslims and, you know, they're different tribes. No. Maybe they're killing each other because British Petroleum favors one group over right. the other.
Right.
Maybe they're killing each other because the Hutu and the Tutsi, one group, was favored by the French over the other.
Right.
Maybe African people in this country have not been able to get together because we got a group that Du Bois called the Talent 10th, who are sworn to maintain the system of white supremacy at the behest of white folk, which is not beneficial to African people in the main, here or abroad. So what I'm saying is, we're talking about, and I'm going back before the Berlin Conference, we're talking about a system of European dominance that has, in fact, retarded the growth rate, for lack of a better word, of African people there and here. It's a very insidious thing. So I don't disagree with what you're saying. I think we got problems, but I think left to our own devices, we can solve many of our problems because the people who perpetuate the problem ain't in the mix no more. We can't lose sight of the fact that we're talking about a recolonization of Africa by those same European groups, okay, who are in fact being aided by black people, again, put in place under a neo-colonialist system where many of the self-determined African brothers from the 60s all the way up to today were murdered. The richest piece of real estate on the planet. And now, with AFRICOM, them same European countries are going in with the casual acquiescence of so-called African leaders and doing what they call legally what they couldn't do under any other circumstance but mass murder 100, 200, 300, 400, 500 years ago and beyond. So now they're doing it legally, and they're going to try to make these things binding.
Yeah, that AFRICOM is something else, man. Checking them out. Let me play something real quick. Uh-oh, wait a minute. Where'd it go? Here we go.
Niggas are scared of revolution. But niggas shouldn't be scared of revolution.
All niggas.
Because revolution is nothing but change, and all niggas do is change. Niggas come in for murk and change into pimping clothes, hit the streets to make some quick change. Niggas change their hair from black to red to blind, and old black hair and lips will change. Niggas kill other niggas just because one didn't receive the correct change. Niggas change from men to women, from women to men. Niggas change, change, change. You hear niggas say, things are changing, things are changing. Nigga things into black nigga things. Black nigga things that go through all kinds of changes. The change in the day that makes it rampant and rave. Black power, and the change that comes over them at night as they sigh and moan. I die. Ooh. high five. Niggas always going through bullshit change. But when it comes for real change, niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are actors. Niggas are actors. Niggas act like they're in a hurry to catch the first act of a great white hope. Niggas try to act like Malcolm. And when a white man doesn't react toward them like he did Malcolm, niggas wanna act violently. Niggas act so cool and strict, causing white people to say, let's make sure niggas act like that. Niggas act like you ain't never seen nobody act before. But when it comes to acting out revolution, niggas say, I can't dig in action. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about getting high and riding around in L's. Niggas to get high and ride to hell. Niggas talk about pimping, pimping that, pimping what? Pimping yours, pimping mine. Just to be pimping is a hell of a line. Niggas are very untogether people. Niggas talk about your mind, talk about my mind stronger than yours. I got that bitch's mind upside. Niggas don't know a damn thing about your mind, but they be right. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas fuck. Niggas fuck, fuck, fuck. Niggas love the word fuck. They think they're so fucking cute. They fuck you around. The first thing they say when they're mad is fuck it. You play a little too much for them. They say fuck you. When it's time to TTP, niggas are somewhere fucking trying to be nice to them. They fuck over you. Niggas don't realize while they're doing all this fucking, they're getting fucked around. But when they do realize, it's too late. So niggas just get fucked up. Niggas talk about fucking, fucking that, fucking this. Fucking yours, fucking my sis. Not knowing what they're fucking for. Ain't fucking for love and appreciation. Just fucking to be fucking. Niggas fuck white thighs, black thighs, yellow thighs, brown thighs. Niggas fuck ankles when they went out of thighs. Niggas fuck Sally, Linda, and Sue. And if you don't mind out, niggas will fuck you. Niggas will fuck fuck if it could be fucked. But when it comes to fucking for revolutionary causes, niggas say fuck revolution. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are players. Niggas are players, are players. Niggas play football, baseball, and basketball while the white man is cutting off their balls. When a niggas play ain't tight enough to play with some black thighs, niggas play with white thighs to see if they still have some play left. And when ain't no white thighs to play with, niggas play with themselves. Niggas tell you they're ready to be liberated, but when you say, let's go take our liberation, niggas reply, I was just playing. Niggas are playing with revolution and losing. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas do a lot of shooting. Niggas shoot off at the mouth. Niggas shoot food. Niggas shoot traps. Niggas cut around the corners and shoot down the streets. Niggas shoot sharp branches at white women. Niggas shoot dope until they're armed. Niggas shoot guns and rifles on New Year's Eve. A new year that is coming in. The white police would do more shooting at them. Where are niggas when the revolution needs some shots? Yeah, you know, niggas are somewhere shooting this shit. Niggas are scared of revolution. Niggas are lovers. Niggas are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to see Clark Gable make love to Marilyn Monroe. Niggas love to see Tarzan fuck over the native. Niggas love to hear a long ranger yell, high on silver. Niggas love commercials. Niggas love commercials. Oh, how niggas love commercials. You can take niggas out of the country, but you can't take the country out of niggas. Niggas are lovers, are lovers, are lovers. Niggas love to hear Malcolm rap, but they didn't love Malcolm. Niggas love everything but themselves. But I'm a lover too. Yep, I'm a lover too. I love niggas, I love niggas, I love niggas. Because niggas are me, and I should only love that which is me. I love to see niggas go through changes, love to see niggas act, love to see niggas make them plays and shoot the shit. But there's one thing about niggas I do not love. Niggas are scared of revolution.
Okay, welcome back to the Chef Rob Show. These Negroes are scared of revolution.
Today, do you know what would happen if the last poet made that today?
Okay, well, we're going to keep on playing it.
Because you know that some of the same stuff you hear in some of the hip-hop, right?
Right. Right, right, right.
How soon we forget.
Yes. Brother Pianki, your line is open.
Yeah, man, I had a hard time getting on there.
I seen, man. Say greetings to us and the other brothers.
Yes, sir.
Man, hip-hop is hip-hop has African overlays in it. I spent the last 3 days at the CBAC conference here in St. Louis. They usually have it annually at different places around the world. They had Africans there from all over the place, man. Brazil had translators in the conference room for Brazil, Spanish, French. And these folks really know how to put on a conference, man. Got a lot that we can learn from them.
What was especially the topic of the conference?
Especially the way they feed you. Well, you had work sessions where white papers were presented on different subjects, especially as it has to do with the diaspora. And a lot was talked about, different things. You know, one brother did something on Fela, Kuti Fela Kuti. I didn't know he was as great as a performer as he is. He rivaled.
I got some of his tracks too.
Yeah, he's a real tough dude.
And he had a lot of wives. Yeah, but he was good. They treat him real bad. They treat him bad.
Yeah, but the nation of Nigeria put up a lot of money for this conference. They must put up probably $100,000, I'd say.
Wow.
For this. Paid everybody's flights, hotel.
And that was where?
We had it at St. Louis at the University of Missouri, St. Louis.
Mm-hmm. So where do you get that information to find out about the conference?
Oh, I was at African Palace, a Nigerian restaurant some brother gave it to me. Hell, the university is right about a mile from my house. But see, the thing is that they don't have it in every city every time. I talked to them last year. I mean, I talked to them today. I said they need to look at putting it in Ethiopia or even in southern Egypt because they have great accommodations down there. Plus, at the same time, they can, tour them sites and add to some of the subject matter that they'd be talking about. A lot of discussion was along the lines of slavery. You know, they look at slavery a lot different than the way we look at it here. What needs to be done is that the two need to share information back and forth.
Exactly. That's right.
And I told them that there need to be some conferences on economics. There are. Somebody told me that there was some. I met some people, sisters from all kind of jobs. I asked one sister, what did you do? She's from Ghana. She pulled out her identification and said, Homeland Security.
Whoa. See?
PhDs, everything else. Yeah, she has showed me her identification. It said Homeland Security.
And so that means she had to be sanctioned by this government in order to have her job in her country, correct?
I don't know. I really don't know. Homeland Security is something new. I know about the FBI because one of my classmates went to become the FBI agent. I think that I told you his story. He wrote a book called Beyond Courage or Badge of Courage or something like that. Kerry, we was in high school together.
What's his name?
Kerry Thornton.
Okay. No, because I know a brother who has some similar situations with the FBI. He came here and we were all, we were literally shaken within his presence because nobody trusted this brother. But it took him, I guess, about 20 years to acclimate himself into the community. And he's run for various offices and things like that. I think he just got elected to a position. But that's a hell of a decision to make. Go ahead,
he told a story about when he got out of high school. he was in, well, we got out of high school. We both came from the same high school, same year. And he was, matter of fact, he went to the University of Missouri, also University of Missouri, St. Louis, to take up a course. I forget which one it was. Because, you know, when you try to get in the FBI, they would tell you the same old thing. You had to have a degree in accounting or a lawyer.
Mm-hmm.
They tell everybody that. And I think he tried to get in. Then, after he came from the University of Missouri, but this story on that is that when he went to there to take up a class, and the lady that he talked to said that, well, you know, the school that you come from, students don't do very well in this university. So she said, I think you maybe want to apply someplace else. So he had received a letter from her to come be interviewed. So, you know, when he got there, that's when all this stuff come out, right? Once they see it, what she looked like, that's what you get for talking white over the phone. I had that experience in Detroit one time.
Mm-hmm.
But so when she told him that, he was despondent, went out in the hallway and sat down on the bench because she had to stamp some papers, sign off on some papers before he could go to the next room. So he's sitting there on the bench and despondent, wondering what he's going to do. Then he got to thinking, and he looked at her, the letter that she sent to him, and looked at her signature. So he sat there and practiced signing her signature until he got it right. Then he signed up the papers, went on to the next room, and gave a packet to the guy. He said, well, you see your transcript here, that's good. He said, this here is good, that's good. And you got this sign, it's okay. He stamped it and said, okay, you in. Welcome to UMSL.
They should have hired him just based on that.
That was one of those moments. Then, after he got that course out of the way, he went on to apply for the FBI. That's when they started telling him that he needed to be an accountant or a lawyer. So he kept calling back. He kept calling back until he finally got a hold of a brother. And the brother talked to him and said, yeah, come on down and sign up. You sound like you're all right to me. And that's how he got into the FBI. You know, he was to those other whites. That's what I call, see, that's what racism was to us back then. You know, when they done just exactly like that lady and just like the first two phone calls that he made.
Mm-hmm.
That's the only contact we ever had with them. So that's what we considered racism back in the late 50s and 60s and going into the 70s. It never had nothing to do with this stuff that you call racism today. When y'all hear me argue about that.
Well,
He stayed in there for about 25, I guess he stayed in the FBI for probably 35 years.
Man, I don't know how he do it. Was he privy to some of the stuff that was going on in the hood, or was that just a need-to-know type situation?
Yeah, he knew what was going on. He experienced all kinds of stuff. And he told me about some things. He was doing a radio interview here the other day, and he was mentioning about some things. I haven't had a chance to read the book, but I'm going to get around to reading it.
You in Missouri, brother?
Mm-hmm.
Can you enlighten us on the sister who broke the story on the government experimenting on African people, particularly in Pruitt-Igoe and other areas, spraying toxic chemicals on the population from schools,
from the top of the building? That was something that went on way a long time ago. People were talking about it, folks. Was telling people that they was crazy, you know, like people talk about the stuff of the conspiracy and all that shit. A lot of the things people be saying is true. It came out in the newspaper here that the Army was indeed experimenting on people. I know the area real well. You know, it's still there today. Where they not too far from us, there Page and Natural Bridge and Euclid and Shreve Avenue over by Matthew Dickens. So that's what they did. They sprayed the area with a bacteria, and then they were checking people as they moved around the train station, bus station.
Right.
Airport.
Primarily in black neighborhoods.
Yeah, that's what it was in black neighborhoods. They didn't do it in white neighborhoods that I know of.
Right.
Really don't care if they did or not.
And it was in 29 other cities. I've been looking in my spare time trying to find the other cities where these experiments occurred. Because, correct me if I'm wrong, from what I've read,
might have
they
been
were
the city
saying,
you grew up in.
Huh?
Might have been the city you grew up in, huh?
Yeah, same here. You know, primarily ours was coming from the University of Chicago, but it didn't just wasn't just there. That's why we have so much enmity for the University of Chicago to this day, because they were facilitators in many of these covert experiments that were being done on African people without their knowledge.
Really?
Oh, man.
Well, yeah, they did do that stuff, and they still are doing things. When a lot of stuff we read about as far as these AIDS and some of these other things, because we know about the Tuskegee. But there's a lot of stuff that was going on that when you talk about it, people think you're crazy. Oh, the government wouldn't do that, but that's a damn lie. They did and have and probably continue to do today. They experiment with race-specific germs.
Yes.
And bacteria. So that's the truth. 4-foot-tall chickens.
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I just come across some information, and again, doing the research, that the recent accounts of the number of experiments that they could ascertain with documentations that was going on today, without people's knowledge in this country. There were over 1,500 cases. Now, we don't know what the experimentation was. That doesn't get released until 25, 30 years down the road when the anger subsides, just like now. But we know it, in fact, is occurring.
Well, I tell you something that they're doing. You see how these women walk around with this slab around their waist?
Go ahead, brother. I ain't touching it.
It's something there. It has got to be something there. Something and something is causing that. And these bloated
stuff. Overweight?
No, it's something that's in the food that they're putting in the food causing that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it ain't just from what people consuming. It's peculiar to every. I ain't saying everyone you see, but a lot of them, I mean, a high percentage of the women that you see have these problems with this slab around their waist, either on the side or hanging over their navel.
Yep.
No, it's not. It's bloated navel. It's like a towel.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have no doubt, brother. You know, again, based on my research, that this thing that we want to be a part of. It's toxic, man. You know?
Well, yeah, they do some evil things, man, but we gotta continue to go on and do what we gotta do.
Never gonna stop doing that. But I'm saying we gotta be wary, and you know, because I think that a lot of what's going on with us, brothers, as you said earlier, we don't believe that these people do these things.
No,
we
don't.
We really don't.
And I tell you something else, we need to leave some of this damn food alone, man. That's the only way it gets in you. It's got to be through that food and some of that stuff that they drink, especially that red. We always drinking something red. Blacks always got to be drinking something red. Now I'm starting to find blacks drinking Mountain Dew. Black folks never drunk no damn Mountain Dew.
Nope. Well, I tell you what gets me, the flaming hot stuff.
You're absolutely
like,
right.
No matter what city I go to, that's what I see the kids eating.
Mm-hmm.
Flaming hot.
It's got to be something in that.
Yeah, and you got to ask yourself, what? It's almost like it's a drug, man.
It's a drug. Kids,
my line
up. First thing they got to do is go get some of that.
Yeah.
Cannot be hurt.
Yeah. Go ahead.
In defense of cayenne, I would say that I consume lots and lots of cayenne. It boosts my immune system, and I have not been sick in at least 8 years. I like to say 10, but at least 8.
Well,
see, cayenne.
You the
cayenne of pepper. It has a
cayenne pepper is good.
I'm very much aware of cayenne pepper. I'm not relating it to what she's talking about.
I can't remember the specific.
Cayenne pepper is good for your blood. But
Tracy, oh, yeah, I'm aware of that.
Tracy.
Go ahead.
What is going on? I mean, you've seen what we've seen talking about how these rolls of fat and stuff is around our young girls and women's waist. Something's going on. And that ain't just from eating. There's something
That's
going on.
That's just from being lazy. Sometimes it ain't a conspiracy behind everything. You know, like today, I remember when I was young, we used to go out and walk everywhere. These kids don't even walk to answer the phone. They just send a text message to a person next to them.
Did you see it's a commercial on that same thing. This little white boy is texting to his grandma and yelling to his grandma to bring him this. And there's one little scene in there where he's trying to get the remote control lawnmower to work and stuff, man. You got to see that boy then.
You have a lot of old school people raising young kids now that don't want them to be active for certain reasons. I remember my aunt. She didn't want my cousin to play basketball because she thought that would make her gay. When my aunt died, the girl came out the closet as gay anyway. She didn't even have to play basketball to be gay. Now she's just a fat gay girl. She could have been in shape and gay. So I know that was a crazy example, but you get what I'm saying.
Well, somebody told me that they got kids 3 and 4 years old saying they gay. Now you know there's something going on there.
Well, that's chemical and biological, okay? We've kind of broke the story on this stuff with the pathlets that's primarily located in plastics, which is an oil derivative. Oil, people don't understand, is one of the most toxic substances in the planet. It's like the blood of the planet, okay? And that these pathlets alter hormones.
Mm-hmm.
Along with bisphenol A, what's known as BPA. They turn testosterone into estrogen. They turn a male hormone into female hormone. This all ties in with their pushing a homosexual agenda. I don't have
a question about that. African Warlord X, he did a show a while ago where he was going through a lot of products that's pushed towards black people, and he was saying how the estrogen levels in the hair products is really high, and single mothers with sons, you know, share hair products and stuff like that with their children, and, you know, he was making that connection. Do you agree with that, or have you ever heard or thought about that?
Oh, I not only agree with it, sister. I did a program where we laid out about 200 pieces of documentation, much of it from the medical community, chronicling the dangers of plastics. And you can go back and look at the advent of plastics in the late 60s, where things like baby diapers begin to be plasticized. A baby's bottles, which used to be glass, like the diapers used to be cloth, and they introduced all these plastics into the mainstream. But one of the things that we found out later was that some of the residue of these pathlets would die in the vaginas of women and stay there, so that when even she had children later, it would make them more susceptible to what they call these gender-bending chemicals. But let me expand on it just a little bit here, because what happened was they began to reconstruct the educational system, understanding that they were pushing a homosexual agenda, they began to falsely label many children as ADHD and an associate number of so-called disorders, where the prescription would, now check this now, the prescription would always include SSRIs. Sure, everybody's heard of those things. But what we didn't know in the late 70s was that these SSRIs were coated with those same gender-bending chemicals. And if you begin to give these children these testosterone-changing chemicals at early ages, and it automatically changes their sexual orientation. It makes the males feminine, and it turns females into hyper-aggressive females.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something. When we was coming up, we hardly ever ran into what we called at the time sissies.
That's right.
Now, I remember a few. But now, every place you turn, you seem as if you have these people that I call them gender confused. And I'm not saying it, you know, I don't care what people do in the bedroom. I'm not that type of, I'm not saying that, but I'm just saying it's just peculiarly a high number, more than I've ever seen before in my life. And, you know, back then you really didn't pay too much attention to it. But now every time you turn around, there it is.
You can't escape it. Now it's like a badge of honor. Before these things, homosexuality, teenage pregnancy, these were like badges of shame. Now they're badges of honor.
I never, ever, ever, never discount the relative effectiveness of baptizing. Because if we go back and look at it, not only was this a social engineered process, but they changed the music to reflect that in the late 70s, where the homosexual thing began to be pushed like nobody's business. Okay? And we can name all of the artists who were being pushed. Three quarters of them were gay, black and white, okay? But this thing is, I don't quite know how to put it, because nobody would think that somebody would go to that length to push a particular agenda. But I said before and I'll say it again, we have identified through their own website and through the medical literature that the move now is to soften the talk against pedophilia, because the next move is to make pedophilia, like homosexuality, a part of the norm in society. That's where we're headed. That's why you see all these stories about pedophiles, when pedophilia is as old as the church in this country, because that's where it was born up out of. I'm sorry, I didn't mean that.
Well, that's how I feel about homosexuality. I feel like it has always, if not anywhere, it's always been in the church.
Oh, that's the center of it. It's just been hidden. And now,
that's
every
right,
now and
really
then,
stepped out. All of these pastors and stuff coming out, they can set up a little group to not vote for Obama because he says he, you know, whatever with gay marriage, and now they want to go against him. But my thing is, how many of y'all members have y'all kicked out that y'all know are gay?
Well, I think that the church is
all
in the very... I think the church has always been a very hypocritical, you know, type organization. But there's a lot of reasons that Obama pushed homosexuality, not to mention the fact
that he's bisexual. And those of us here in Chicago, many of us have known this for some time. It's no revelation to us. We know that his church has a downfall organization inside the church that he claims to come from. So it ain't nothing, you know.
Well, what kind of organized was Obama doing? What was the purpose of the group?
To basically allow for those, because this is an upper middle class church, to allow for them to remain in their professional mode and have relationships with other homosexuals inside the church. But that one of the prerequisites was that they had to have a beard.
That's what kind of organizing he was involved in that everyone's always talking about?
Brother, no, not him. This was put in place by Jeremiah Wright.
But did you know him when he was involved in organizing like everybody always, credited him?
Brother. That's a front. He never organized anything here. He was basically
no organization, anything.
He worked out of the Gamaliel Foundation, which is one of those foundations who basically do social engineering in the black community. Okay, finances certain organizations to serve as what they call an early warning system to identify activists within the community that white America should keep their eyes on, to keep black people in service to the status quo. And so, like so much else of his history, and we've gone back and found his relationship with the CIA through his mother, his grandmother, his grandfather, all of them have a military intelligence background. His mother worked for Ford Foundation, putting in place the same thing that caused the collapse of the economic system here.
That white lady.
Yeah.
And so that when she came, go ahead.
Huh?
Go ahead. I'm listening.
No, I was just going to say, she worked with Tim Geithner's father.
Mm.
So we know, that's why before Obama was elected, the major newspaper here, the Chicago Tribune, ran an article, and the title of it was "The First Jewish President." And so we understood that he was basically, based on the people who were financing him, he was basically a tool of the Jewish mafia, the money people here. And that
so
they
when
really
he ran
looked,
against when he ran against Bobby Rush, what was he involved in before that in Chicago?
That's when he was so-called working for the Gamaliel Foundation, being a community organizer. But where he was organizing is in my neighborhood. And I was at my apex those years. We didn't know him, never heard of him, anything. He was basically looking for some. Here's what the intelligence community do. They'll look for somewhere to install an operative to do their bidding, to ingrain themselves or ingratiate themselves within the community. So they identify certain points in the community where they can inject someone to maximize their efforts. This is why many of the so-called spies in the community come up out of the religious community, okay? Because that's the heartbeat. That's the power center. No matter where you go in the country, that's the power center in the black community, the churches. So he went and picked a mainstream, a well-to-do black church in what was really the heart of the ghetto. Well, part of the heart of the ghetto on 95th Street is about two blocks from public housing. Okay? So, no, all of Obama's past, and you read the stuff that's been written about him in mainstream media, and if you read between the lines, they'll tell you he was being groomed since the early 90s. They were taking pictures of him when he had no political spot to speak of.
the Jewish mafia in this town.
You say he stayed off of 95th Street?
No, no. That's where the church was.
Oh.
And still
where
is.
Did he stay at? Where did he live at?
Nobody knows.
I know where Martin Luther King and 75th, 76th Street, you know, going in that direction where the blocks get bigger and bigger. Did he stay out in that direction?
He lives on the other side of that now in what's called Hyde Park, which is a Chicago Jewish stronghold. That's where he lived. So when you see all the Jewish people around him, no one.
And that's part of Bobby Rush's district? That's part of Bobby Rush's district?
Yeah, I guess you could say that. But, I mean, Bobby Rush, you know, brother, you got to come to Chicago because you
so
and his story.
if we was associated with a block, you know, I know where 39th going on out.
Right.
Alongside the parks and everything. So it's.
Right.
You say if I was headed walking in that direction, I would need to go to the right to get over to where he was. I'm not familiar with Hyde Park. I've heard of it.
Well, Hyde Park would be close to the lakefront. In the middle
That's going in the other direction.
Yes, east.
Okay.
Okay. King Drive is east, but. Where he lives, Hyde Park
runs,
is further
King
east.
Drive runs east and west, don't it?
No, King Drive runs north and south.
North and
but
south.
But it's on the east side.
Okay, now I see what you're saying.
Yeah, it runs north and south. It's a long street. Goes from one end of the city just about to the other.
And when you go south, the streets, the blocks get larger and count larger and larger, right?
Well, some of them get longer. You know, it's all relative.
North is going back toward the downtown, right?
Right.
Okay. Now
south is going back where he supposedly was a community organizer in the hundreds.
You know where Washington Park is, don't you?
I go there as often as I can. Yes, sir. He
now,
lives
Washington
east
Park.
Of Washington Park.
Okay.
When you get
My
to Washington Park.
My auntie stayed on 39th and Prairie.
Mm-hmm.
Right there down the street from the high school.
Right.
You know what Amber Inn is?
Yes.
Yeah. Because Walter Williams Museum is right across the street from the Amber Inn.
Yeah, I know Walter Williams well. I remember when he was taking a beating trying to tell black people about the origins of Christianity and where it came from.
Then it come out the Amber Inn. Amber Inn and turn right, and you'd be right there. Look to your right, you can see where I used to play it when I was a kid when I used to visit my auntie.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I'm going to tell you something, brother. That whole area is becoming white.
Mm-hmm.
they're expanding the city, and this is not any different from any major city you go into. They're expanding the city and basically moving black people out of these areas where much of what you're talking about used to be inundated with public housing developments.
Yeah, because you know those apartments, you know, six-family flat apartments, they turned them things into like $300,000 condos.
That's because they're basically pricing black people out of the city, and those black people who have their homes in that area, what happens is as the level of income increases in those areas, many of the black people who live in those areas can no longer afford to pay the tax bills.
Yeah.
Well, we tried to warn people that this is how they was going to come to remove black people from the cities. And so even though the property values are going down, the tax bills are going up.
That's the way they did black folks in the South with their land. They didn't build on black folks' land. They just built next to it.
That's right.
That's what they did here. I mean, they call them mini mansions where they put these houses in these areas, these low-income areas where they done wiped everything out. So what's still there is there. They put these houses, these big old houses in these little bitty spaces, and they make the people's value, their taxes go up higher, and they can't afford it.
That's how they're moving everywhere, and it's working. And what distresses me is none of this is being addressed. This is why I'm not an advocate of electoral politics. I think it's a fool's errand. We've gotten very little out of electoral politics, and as government becomes more and more privatized, because that too is a part of the new equation, in reorganizing the entire social structure. We must understand these things, because if we don't, we're going to find ourselves on the outskirts of every major city in this country, and they've already termed those areas edge cities.
Well, you know, I'm going to tell you something, man. This is a big game, because when blacks move out the city, they move into an area. You know, when they move in the area, it becomes 40% black whites move out, so blacks take control of a nice area. Then the next thing you know, they start inserting elements of crime into the area.
Right.
All right, then next thing you know, here come them damn hustlers. The same Negro hustlers, organizations and stuff that was driving off of the criminality and the struggles of blacks when they was in the cities. Here they come.
Yep.
Don't forget the last part. And then after they do that, they take away the public transportation.
Yep. And it's going to be more insidious the next time around, because moving is going to be strictly monitored. That's why they put the cameras everywhere. And Brother Rob, you and I discussed this before. The reason that you'll find all over the country they're putting the sensors in the ground is because the sensors will correspond with the chips in the automobiles,
right,
which will alert the authorities to anyone driving in an area that their chip says they're not allowed to drive in. Couple that with the privatization of the roadways, which is ongoing right now as well, because everything that the government controls is becoming corporate or privatized, and you can see how much of our movement is going to be severely restricted based on behavior.
Not only that, when you go to order food, I mean, when they get rid of the cash and you go to order food, and just for say you order a pizza, rather getting a vegetarian pizza, you're going to have cheese and pepperoni. And when you
right.
give them your number, up going to pop some information and say, well, you look, you ain't supposed to be eating cheese and pepperoni because of your diet.
That's
and
right.
So we could tax you for
That's right. Now, what you just said is the reason why they're putting all the restrictions in the public school system. Okay? Because they say overweight people are a hazard, a drain on society. That's called conspicuous consumption. And so what they must do is to take control of the diets in the school system, as well as people who are getting any kind of public assistance, link cards, etc. They're going to determine what you buy and what you can't buy, and what you can eat and what you can't eat based on your weight. That's why you see them pushing these things in the school system.
Well, I understand they don't allow children in Chicago public school to bring their own lunch.
That is correct. It's crazy. Well, it's crazy if you don't understand the rationale for why they're doing what they're doing. If you understand the rationale, it makes perfectly good sense.
Yeah, then they, you know, and then black folks fall for that crazy stuff, man. Like this stuff where a child, 14-year-old girl, 14-year-old can get a morning after pill without letting their parents know.
And they can go and get a Gardasil, males and females, because of the homosexual paradigm. Now they want the males to take the Gardasil vaccine. And I tell anybody,
Tracy,
all you got to do is take look at the word guard a seal.
And see, Tracy, when we talk about this, the first thing come to some women's mind, man, I see it all. Oh, now you anti-woman, you anti-feminist. No, it ain't that time film. We just talking about these things going on that ain't supposed to be going on. How in the world is it being that a child that age is supposed to go receive some sort of drugs without the parents even knowing about it? Then I understand that they can go across the state lines and receive some kind of treatment, whether it's abortion or whatever, without telling their parents.
In California, they're making the vaccines mandatory right now.
There's no way in the world I let give my kid to this meth.
Unless you're in a situation where you receive some kind of public assistance, and your public assistance, like this, why they try to do it with the schools. If you don't get your children the shots, they don't want them in the schools. Unless you have, so far you have the right to a refusal based on your religious preference, okay? But they're going to move that out the way too, so that let's just say you don't get the shots necessary for, you know, whatever it is that you want to do. They will restrict your movement. They will restrict your buying habit. They will put a level of restriction on you that makes, what's this thing, this no-fly list that makes that
Yeah,
hell.
No-buy list.
Yeah, that's what this is, what this is all headed towards. And it's all documented. It's in government documents. This ain't nothing, you know, that we got to make up anything. This is real. I'm just not sure if we really are aware of what's happening, nor am I sure if we're really serious about dealing with it. Because so far, what I hear, brother, is we basically have thrown our children to the wolves.
Well, not only that, we're throwing ourselves to the wolves, too, because what's happening? You can see it now and listen to people talk that they want government to provide all this shit, man. They
yep.
want government, excuse my language, but they, it's Tracy, but they want government to provide all, everything that you depend on. Want you to provide your food, want to provide your health. They want them to provide your safety, your medicine. And it's going to get to that point, like you said, that you're going to have a number associated with you, whether it's a debit card or however. And when you try to use that debit card, up gonna pop a code and say, well, you're not supposed to be buying this.
That's right.
But you can buy this one.
That is absolutely
can't drive,
right.
You can't drive this way, but you got to go this way.
And you can see it, because, brother, about 15 years ago, again, we were warning people that this is what they were doing. Brother Rob, you may remember this. They began to put cul-de-sacs throughout the black community. And for those who may not understand, that's a 17th century European product where areas are blocked off with concrete barriers in the middle of the street or two-way streets, because Chicago used to run in alternate directions from one street to the next. One street be going south, the next street be going north. Next street go south,
right.
Next street go north.
Yeah.
They came with these cul-de-sacs where they made 6-7 streets one way and blocked
right.
the exits from the other end. That's restricting your movement, whether you recognize it or not. Because now, if you go in one way, you automatically know when you're coming out or where you're coming out, because there is no other exit. So it basically dictates the movement you're going to make when you go in a certain area, because you have no other option.
It's
so this is all about controlling the flow. Go ahead, brother.
It's a hassle more than you can move, man. It's a real hassle with that, man. And I always wonder why they put so many of them around here for this. And it is a restriction movement. No other way to look at it, because it's a real hassle doing that. And it creates a little bit more congestion on a lot of streets.
You, Brother Rob, you and the brothers and the sisters, you can pull up an article. This is a dynamite article written in the 90s after the L.A. riots, which we see the same thing going on here in Chicago, that entire psychological program that was put in place to move black people out of L.A. proper, which is almost complete now, where they came with the phony hip-hop beat between East-West. In Chicago now, we got phony hip-hop on the front page of the newspapers with this guy named Chief Keef and another guy, Little JoJo. And they're supposed to be beefing with each other over the internet, okay? One of them gets killed. It's the exact same scenario. I think I explained this to you before, Rob. They also came in California with the crack cocaine through Freeway Ricky Ross. Come to find out, the crack cocaine was being used to finance Iran-Contra, a covert war. Here in Chicago, we now know, based on the testimony of one of the leaders from the Sinaloa cartel, which was the cartel that the weapons from Fast and Furious was going to down in Mexico, he turned on them because they were being controlled by the CIA. He goes on trial a month ago here in Chicago, and he points out at blank that he was given carte blanche to bring as much drugs into Chicago as he wanted. And along with the drugs came the guns. And I don't have to tell any of you, because you've probably seen it, that Chicago has supposedly been a war zone for the last year or two. Okay? The reason it is a war zone is for the same reason that L.A. with Crips and Bloods beefing with each other and East-West hip-hop beef. All of it is the exact same psychological program. They call it a PSYOP. The same program that they use in California in the 90s, they use in Chicago right now. But you must be able to read between the lines to see that this is exactly the same program.
It's deep. It's real.
It's real.
Yeah, it's real.
You know, I heard an interview with, matter of fact, I called in and talked to him, Ricky Ross. And I asked him, I say, when you finally got out of jail and found out the agencies that was benefiting from what you was doing, how did you feel? And he said, I was mad.
Yep.
When he found out.
Well, I've heard the brother speak on several occasions since he's been out, you know, with all the restrictions that they got on him. Because you know they don't want him talking too much about this stuff because it brings back ugly reminders. But what's even more important, when the media guy, I forget his name, wrote the book in the San Jose Mercury News talking about that, exposing that whole thing, about 5 years later, they found him with two shotgun wounds in his head. Two.
You know, it was another guy, too, because you know why that was going on the West Coast. It was the same thing going on the East Coast, but the crack was coming out of Jamaica. It was financing their little political war that they had over there. Another guy did the same thing, and once he wrote the story, and I can't remember if he wrote a book or if it was something to do with an article, but about 2 years later, they, like, blackballed him, couldn't get a job, and then they found him dead, too.
Yes.
So it's amazing to me how right now today you can have an ex-correction officer who's posing as Freeway Ricky Ross, who raps about selling drugs and living this glamorous lifestyle of a drug dealer, and these children, the parents of the children who came up during this crack era, would even let their kids listen to. I can't for the life of me today in 2012 understand why we still support rap music. We know it don't come from us.
Because we're in the middle of frequency war, sister. And just in a nutshell, they're using extremely low frequencies. That's why everywhere you go in the black community around the country, you'll find our radio stations existing on the tail end of the dial. Those are frequencies that they use, including, as I said before, and Google this, the article I guarantee you will come up, talking about the studies that were done using blue flashing lights to, in fact, alter behavior. Now, I don't know where any one of you live, but if you live in the ghetto in your respective cities, I'll bet you got them blue flashing lights all over the place.
Yeah. You know what where I work at is this one spot at my job where I can sit and see a parking deck. And in the parking deck, I always wonder, what is these blue flashing lights for in the parking deck? It's like kind of far off, but you can see it's a parking deck, and you can see all these different points in there with the blue flashing lights. Our police cars have blue flashing lights.
Yes, but they're only on for a short period of time. Go ahead, man.
Your gas meters now, they send out radio signals where the gas man don't have to come out and physically read them. Same thing with your water meter.
Those are smart. Those are smart meters. And they alter behavior as well. All of the new technology coming out today is a reason that it's geared around frequencies and basically altering people's or dictating people's behavior without their knowledge based on the use of these extremely low frequencies, ELF waves. You can Google it. So there's no need for us not to know what's going on. The key is to understand how to rectify the problem. And the way you rectify the problem is through the access of information. You have to get people interested in acquiring the kind of information that will allow them to move beyond vibrating at a low level. That's why hip-hop is all about negativity, because that basically perpetuates a low vibration. Sex, drugs, money. That's low vibration phenomena. The acquisition of knowledge will allow you to vibrate at a higher level. Go ahead, bro.
Well, the CIA do use some type of tactics. They do indefinitely use those type of psychological, what they call psychological warfare tactics, where they will create these, like this music. This music is designed to put our children in a particular frame of mind. And then they began to act out. Then the next thing you know, you got the police ready to carry them off to jail and sentence them.
Yep.
Where they end up in these prisons where they have to have 90%, occupancy.
That's right.
These private industries, these private companies, see, states can't afford to build prisons. So these private entities build prisons and they lease them out to the state and sometimes run them. Well, they do run them. But
yep.
They run them, they do all this on the agreement that they're going to have to be occupied at least 90-95%. So now that puts a strain on the police
parents. These parents it's just like you look at the youth today and the parents, we were the youth not too long ago, and we should know better to raise the children better. It makes no sense that it's a repeat. What's going on now just seems like a repeat of the early 90s. And with everything we learned, I can't see how older people today, how they flunk to hip-hop music and these lifestyles that don't get us anywhere. If you know the police target you, why make yourself a big visible point to be targeted?
Well, I don't think that, people always say, everybody got the internet today, so, people have more access, and, I doubt that. I'm not doubting that people got access to the internet. But if you don't know what to look for, why would you look for it?
Well, you don't need the internet to go and look for common sense. Or you don't need the internet to go and look up history. You can. They still got libraries around, but what I'm saying is, I don't know, it's kind of hard to relay what I'm thinking, what's going on in my head. It's just the things that we see happening, we should be more together to a point where we won't let them happen to us. Like, for instance, you look at somebody from the early 70s, late 60s, I think of something like that, like Fred Hampton. The guy was like 21, 22 years old, and all the things that he had organized and put together in his community at that age, and they had this one interview of him on YouTube, and he was saying, you know, they might take me out. But if they take me out, I got plenty of people that's able to come in and take my place. I don't
see
no kid these days, 21 years old, of that nature, in that age range, that's able to do the things that this man did. And that's just in the 60s. I mean, the company I work for, Guaranteed, is a corporation. It's a white corporation. But back in the early 1900s, it was brand new. The board of directors for the corporation at that time wasn't nobody over 21. Five men running a company, nobody over 21. And I can't understand why today the parents would let the kids still be acting like 10 and 12-year-olds when at the age of 13, 14, 15, they should be prepared for adulthood. The parents shouldn't still be trying to keep them as children.
Well, I understand what you're saying, sister, but, you know, two things. I must defend hip-hop. Back in the 90s, I was considered they used to call me MC Old, okay, because I was always an old guy, and they was wondering why I'm dealing with hip-hop. I say I'm the senior citizen of hip-hop. Because it was important to me to understand the culture in order to deal with it effectively. And so I saw the changeover in the hip-hop. I go back to the origin of hip-hop when it was all about positive talk. Even it's like a jungle. Sometimes it makes you wonder how you keep them going under. That was talking about life in the projects and in the ghetto, okay?
But nothing in that song offered you a solution. It just pointed out the problems you already knew was there. That's the thing we do. We make excuses for hip-hop at all points, and it's not never positive more than it's negative. Never. That song, okay, was a good song, but he did not point out any solutions in that song.
Wait, let me. Hold on. Yeah, here it is. We do those kind of songs are always pushed, but there are a bunch of other songs that say something different. Okay, you don't hear too much tonight, a bunch about them. And then one of the groups that did put out some stuff that was contrary was Public Enemy, and they were ostracized in the beginning anyway. I don't have much time left. It's been a great conversation. I'm glad everybody came out. I gotta kind of get out of here. I got some work to do.
Yes, sir.
So I appreciate everybody coming out.
All right,
I appreciate everybody. Hotel.
Got to be grooving, jamming on the spot. The mothership connection from on your head. Yeah, working up a sweat. Is it wet yet?
Getting down on the one which we believe.
been with.